So we'll get started, bring this meeting together. Kelly on the line. I don't know why we have to listen. Kelly's in Italy. Home, so.
Did you see the way they're going by their wine there? Gasoline hose.
Growler gasoline hose filling station. So, all right, so we'll call the meeting to order. And then we've got some public comment. We'll go through some administrative actions, and then we're going to rearrange the. And then rearrange the. We've got one item of new business we want to bring up to the front of the schedule. So, public comment. I saw there was one name down about the equestrian.
There we are. Okay.
So, you want to ask a question and speak?
Introduce ourselves.
Okay.
I'm Katie Kennedy, and I'm Jan Moran, and we're with the Clark County Executive Horse Council. And the reason that we're here, want to introduce ourselves, is that we're very excited about the development for Daybreak Park and looking for opportunities to work with you specifically about the equestrian participation in that development to make sure that that's something that's included in it. We have a committee within the Clark County Executive Horse Council that has been put together that's going to be dedicated to working with this group. We're kind of new to this, so we're looking at advice about how we can move forward with you. The chair of that committee is Jillian Boros. She's not able to be here. I do have a handout I gave to Bill.
We have that.
We put this together, just to give you an idea of some of the questions that we have. We don't have answers right now, but just kind of what our thought process is about what we would like some feedback in that development process with you. We're interested in the timeline for decisions about Daybreak Park. Again, we really are hoping that the equestrian aspects are going to be one of the primary features and not a secondary one that's thought of later. So we want to make sure we're aware of that timeline. When and how will horseback riding be removed from the restrictions on the signs? I don't know if that's been brought to your attention.
Mm-hmm. It has. We have a low-tech solution that is to put tape right over the top of that.
I like that cost-effective method.
Yes.
And another thing that's come up is some of the surfaces that are being proposed. We'd like to talk a little bit more about that and how that would fit into the needs for the equestrian groups, and specifically the pavement. It's far less than ideal for the equestrian needs. And just, again, generally, how can we get involved and how can we work together so that it's developed meeting that part of the community's needs as well.
Okay.
Good.
Thank you for coming.
Bill asked me to respond to some of that. If you don't mind, I'm Kevin Tyler, Lance Manager with Public Works. And so, timeline for decisions regarding Daybreak Park. So, we are just at the point of submitting a staff report to council to transfer the land from the land trust to the county. And we have talked with our capital infrastructure development group, the engineering construction division manager, about assigning work to get that project actually started. Project manager will likely pick it up at the beginning of next year. So very beginning of 2019, we'll kick off the project and start the design process. So that would be the initial stages where you could potentially get involved. And then in terms of sustainable walking surfaces, since the money is coming from the state, we have a requirement to meet, we always have a requirement to meet ADA.
Right.
And so, the surfaces will have to meet those requirements. But what we've done in the past, and we did this on the Chalachi Trail, mm-hmm. was provide a horse, an equestrian route alongside. So that's something that we could definitely look at with this project as well. So then you have multiple surfaces that you're dealing with. So I think that's something that could be reviewed during the design process.
Okay.
And if you want to provide us with contact information, it's all here. So we can provide this to the project manager when we start that development process.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And have you seen the master plan to date? I gave a couple copies to Anita Will.
Yeah, Anita has shared that with
me. Okay, very good.
She's part of our group as well. And when this process starts in January, is it going to be here at this forum, or might it be a separate?
It will be separate.
Okay.
So I don't know if we'll be doing updates for Parks Advisory Board on the project, probably as it goes along.
As we progress through.
Yeah. But the design process will happen in our engineering construction division at the downtown office at the Public Service Center. Okay. And there'll be opportunities through that process to, you know, involve the public.
Okay. Anything else?
No, thank you very much. Yes,
nice to meet everybody. Anybody else? Are you here listening again?
Okay. Great. Still. All right. Let's go through the roll call. We've got some new faces here, and want to kind of get everybody known. And did you ever get a hold of Kelly?
I left him a tip.
Okay, all right. Then we'll go through our administrative ideas or actions, and go from there. So, Bill, you want to start with the
sure.
roll call?
Bill Bierke, Parks Manager, President. I'd like to introduce Ahmad Kayomi, my new boss. He's the Public Works Director and the County Engineer, and very happy to have him on board with us.
Bill's okay. done a great job.
Yeah.
Here's Kelly.
Been going around trying to get to know the staff and what they do, and this morning I had a nice trip to one of our parks. So.
Kelly.
What
I'm
park
trying to
it?
Get you on but speaker.
Mobile Falls to look at the bridge.
Mm-hmm. Is that beautiful?
No, it's
funny because there's a kid sitting on the rail today when we're
up. Oh, great, yeah.
Excellent. No, glad to be here. I was in the air about 13 years, so I went to the Tri-Cities. So I wanted to come back.
Where is the...
Welcome back. Glad to be here.
Can you talk? Okay. Laura, you want to...
Laura, I'm okay. Parks and Land Division.
Let me call you back, Kelly.
John Spencer, Parks and Advisory Board.
I can't get it on the speaker.
I'm Sybil Crow, and I'm the interim person representing the Park Foundation. Hopefully I can be full-time. We're looking for a new executive director, and at that time, that decision will be made. I sit on the Park and Rec Board for Vancouver. And again, I'm vice
there
chair of Park Foundation, so I'm really happy to be here. I go on a lot of trips with the county, so I know some of you already, and so it's kind of comfortable being with everybody again.
Amongst friends.
Yeah.
I'm Jennifer Halleck, I'm with Vancouver Public Schools.
Kelsey Potter, PAB co-chair.
I'm Jay Chester, co-chair. Kelly, introduce yourself. Kelly, can you hear us?
Okay.
Must be a little lag.
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right.
Great.
I can hear you. Okay.
And we can hear you. Barbara Anderson, Parks
Great.
Advisory.
Kevin Path, Park Advisory Board.
Peter Van Arquick, Clark County Assessor.
Kevin Tyler, Lands Manager for Public Works.
Sure with you, Clark County Staff.
Marcy Wright, I am an OA3 in the Assessor's Office.
Rebecca Barrio, Program Coordinator with the Assessor's Office.
All right. So we'll go through our meeting minutes real quick. If there were any changes or additions, deletions from last meeting, or meeting minutes from last meeting. If not, can I get a motion to approve? All right. It's been moved.
Second.
Dave is not here today, so we'll help Laura and us take notes and catch things. So it was moved and seconded for the approval of the meeting minutes from last meeting.
Who was the second?
The second was Barbara. Any other discussion? All right. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? All right. So there is a lag. It's unanimous. All right. And again, want to encourage everybody to turn in their volunteer hours for PAB. All of us have different times and different things we're working on and volunteering with through PAB. So please make sure You do that.
And Laura's grabbing the new sheet. Yes.
I'll do it online.
Yeah. Committed to. Yeah, we can turn in our back ones also, right?
Yes.
No, I've still got mine sitting on my desk filled out. I haven't submitted it yet. Need to do that. All right. We are going to adjust the agenda a little bit today. We're going to move item A from the new business up to the front. Before the unfinished business, the public benefits rating system. We have several representatives here to present today, I believe. So
thank you.
I'll turn the floor over to you guys.
Yeah. You want me just to give a summary first and kind of take over?
Well, I mean, maybe what I can do is give a history of it.
Okay.
And why. So in the assessor's office, of course, we're responsible for valuing property for the purpose of taxation. And within that responsibility, there's a number of programs we also administer, one of them being the Senior Exemption Program, one being Farm and Agriculture, and another one being the Open Space. So in Open Space, when people apply for Open Space, they actually go through Kevin's group, and it has to be approved by the council. One of the challenges that arises is that basically once it's been approved by the council, it kind of goes into this black hole and it just sits there. There's also a requirement that there be a minimum of 10 acres currently in code. One of the other things that some counties have is farm conservation. We don't have that in Clark County. The council has never decided to implement having farm conservation as part of it. And so one of the challenges we have as farmers get to be elderly and they quit farming, if they're not having commercial farm income, they have to come out of the program. And I think what it costs typically people about $30,000 in back taxes and penalties to come out of it. So it's a significant hit for people, and we have some that are up of $100,000, you know, something close to $1 million that cost to take them out of farm and ag. And so we identified that there was this kind of a need that a lot of them were hitting, and so we started looking at a public benefit rating system. And the great thing about a public benefit rating system, and what it does is it kind of replaces what's open space, is then once we're doing that, there's a lot of other things that we can do. And so we said that, you know, we can look at saying, for example, I know we have some of the on our board that's working development. We have some people like from the you know, the city of Ridgefield, one of the counselors from the city of Ridgefield, and they're trying to put trails through it, through people's properties and in different places. They're doing that in the city of Camas. Currently, there's really nothing that we can do, but if we develop a public benefit rating system, we can implement things where, hey, if you allow a trail to go through your property, we can consider that a public benefit, and then we can give you, you know, a percentage off on your taxes. If you have land that's next to a stream and you're redoing wetland habitat, there's just different things that people can do that we say, well, that's great for Clark County and the livability of Clark County, and therefore we think that that should be something that we want to encourage, and how we can encourage that is by giving people benefit on the property tax. So we went and we took it to the council. The council, of course, whenever we take someone out of farm and ag, you know, and it's a high dollar amount, people tend to complain, right? And a lot of times they do is they go and complain to the council, and we're like, well, this is the state law. You don't have this farm conservation. But there is this other option that if you would like us to do it, we can go take a look at it. And the council did decide that, yes, they would like us to look at developing a public benefit rating system for Clark County. And that I was the executive sponsor of it, and then we would put a team together to do it. So that's kind of the background, how we got to deciding to move forward with a group looking at doing a public benefit rating system. So now I'll let Rebecca, she is a manager in my office, and she's the one that's kind of leading that team working on the public benefit rating system, developing it for Clark County.
Rebecca,
So for members, you have a packet. This is in your packet, but it's towards the back following the agenda. There's a PowerPoint, the introduction material, the WSC information, as well as the major tables that I'll be introducing today.
Okay. So I guess what I need to find out is what currently are you all interested in knowing about what we've done? I mean, I could go through a timeline about where we were and where we are today.
It says you're looking for a motion from us, or somebody's looking for a motion from us for approval of this or in support of this, or what's... And
Jill, I think we were looking for your input.
Okay.
Because, okay. So part of the public benefit rating system that Peter was talking about is there are all these various categories that we could choose as a county to adopt.
To adopt into.
And some of them have a lot of overlap with parks.
Okay.
So there's the open space categories, there's trails, there's forestry, there's some agriculture that we've talked about here relating to heritage farm and all of the conservation features properties that we manage and we've been targeting over the years. So internally we've put together a list of some categories that other counties have used and kind of tailored them to meet our needs,
okay.
We believe. And so we would like your thoughts on those. And and you know, maybe eventually a motion that you are in support of these after we get your input,
sure.
And consider your thoughts. So,
and I have one other question. This public benefit rating system is in lieu of losing the tax exemption for the ag exemption or not?
Farm and ag is its own separate item.
Okay.
Open space is something different, and there are certain qualifications that one has to meet in order to go to open space. And so, what we're doing is trying with a public benefit rating system to realize that maybe cities, maybe the parks board could use some tools to maybe help get some things move along. So what we want to do is, as we're building a public benefit rating system, is get the input from different people. What tools would you like? So let's say you want to put a trail through a property. You may go up to the person and go, hey, I want to put it, can we have an easement through the back of your property to put a trail and have public access on it? And they're like, well, that's great. What's in it for me? Say, well, if you put a trail through, and you give us this easement, you'll get a certain percentage off on your property taxes on the value of the land.
Whether it's coming out of the ag designation or no matter what designation the property is that what we're...
Well, when they move it in, because right now we have a minimum of 10 acres, right?
Right.
So there's
a lot of
acres. Let's say if you have 5 acres, you can't get in it at all.
Right.
Those have been all taken out. But you may have a 5-acre parcel that would be perfect for taking the back part of it and, maybe having a horse trail or something go through it. And it's, it's kind of another tool for someone to use to say, we'd like to put a trail through here. Can we get an easement? And because you gave us this easement, here's one of the things that we can do is we can...
Okay, so it's a benefit.
Give you a benefit. Okay. It's a public benefit for you doing this. And therefore, there'd be a point system that says, because we would say it's worth, 10 points or whatever, and we haven't got that, the number of points.
I totally understand. But
it could be that's 10 points, so, we drop your land value 30% for this easement through here.
So in your example, the easements in perpetuity, what if someone sells that property? That's my biggest concern. We establish a trail, the next owner doesn't want people walking on their property.
Well, see, we talked, and we're actually talking about that today. But the thing is that you can sit there and if you put an easement on the land, it then moves with the land.
Okay.
And that's one of the things we could be the requirement. We may say, hey, if you just let us put the trail through, that's great, but the next person can do it. So it may be the Parks Board wants to say, well, in order to get that benefit, you have to give us an easement. Yeah. So yeah, you still own the land.
Yeah, with the land.
But because you know you've given us this easement, we'll put typically we put zero value on easements, but still on the rest of your land, you still get a percentage off of that, the value on that. So they're at least something that you could get back.
Okay. Sure.
But that's kind of what we're asking for feedback from you get from this board. Is what important things would you want to see in there? And it may, like you say, it may be we want an easement because we don't want to build a trail and have them mix it on the deal. Not interested.
Yeah.
Why don't we let her do her thing?
Yeah.
I'm seeing that a lot of the questions are being answered in here.
Okay.
Yeah. But well, what I can easily do is refer you to the spreadsheet here.
Yeah.
This is what Kevin and his group have identified. We went through a lot of counties and looked at all of their programs. And kind of look at them for ease of, you know, matching our county a little bit, seeing if they have the same internal systems as we do, and looking how easy it was for their programs to be implemented. And after a lot of feedback, we ended up trying to shadow King County. They do have a more robust pet program than, you know, that's the best, you know, the biggest program we have in the state. So, but there are a lot of things that aligned with us. And so what we did is we took those the resources on the left column and matched those to things that currently we felt were important or could align with your group for Clark County. So we're trying to apply what they did and apply it towards Clark County. So in each of those areas, there's a criteria, and then we would end up doing a valuing system for that. And then we're currently trying to figure out how to do the mapping for something like that. And then Kevin has some notes on the end there. So your group is just a small portion of the bigger picture of PBRS. So we have other entities that are looking at it as directed towards their groups and doing a grid simple like this and trying to understand the information as it applies to Clark County, okay? So are there other questions on the slide that you'd like to address?
Yeah, I think it's, I can't quite read it. I think it's 4, where it talks about the PBRS is a tool for evaluating the benefits.
Yeah.
Is there a standardized formula, or is this a computerized system, or what, that says that this value is 10% of your taxes, and this would value at 20%.
Well, Peter probably can answer that, too.
And that's what we're doing as we go through the system, and that's the do is when you're doing the public benefit, it's a point system, because you may have trails, you may have, you know, you can allow public access, you may have something else on that same property that you want to protect. Maybe there's a stream running through, and you know, different things. So you can take a look at a parcel and say, okay, you're allowing a trail, you're allowing this, you're allowing this, and so you have different points, and that's what the purpose of the team is to kind of come together and say, in Clark County, this is what we value. This is what we think the number of points should be on this. And, you know, therefore, for example, something like a golf course, you know, right? You may have different point systems for, you know, if it's a, you know, private club versus, you know, one that, you know, has access to the public in general, or, you know. So, I mean, it's just different criteria that is put into place, and then different weighting, and that's what the committee's looking at doing.
And right now we have open space and farm and ag, which you're in the program or you're not in the program. If you're in the program, it's a certain amount of reduction in your taxes. It's standard across the board, I believe, right?
Yes.
So this just is a lot more flexibility. You could have one property that has very limited public benefit and then maybe gets a 5% decrease on their taxes, whereas this other property might have many benefits to the general public and will get almost an 80 or 90% reduction in their taxes.
And so one of my questions would be, you're not having a minimum size then, or a piece of property. In other words, 10 acres is the ag exemption. You're allowing whatever size.
No, that's currently what's in
currently
open space, not ag.
Oh, okay.
There's different acres for that, but that's the 10 acres for the open space. So what we're trying to do is design. Because, like, say, if you do want to run a trail through and you want to give someone a benefit, they may have a half acre lot.
Yeah, well, and that's what
and
I'm saying.
It's like, we can't put it open space. So it's like, well, let's, put a tool in people's board and do something.
Okay. Will any current property owners that are receiving a greater benefit decrease their tax benefit by implementing this point system versus what they're able to do now?
There could be some, but probably a lot of them would probably see an increase in their taxes that are currently in it. Because a lot of times we have, one of the challenges that we do is, and what brought it up, and I don't even remember what the property was. It's the 150 acres out in Ridgefield, right? They quit farming it. They put it in. So they're, right now, if you're in open space, you're getting the same price as if, you know, you were doing farm and ag. But it's like, okay, but you're not doing anything with it. So that's not as valuable to it, to the community, but you're still getting the tax break. And there's also some, no one...
value is kind of subjective on that. Well, people may feel like open space is of equal value to someone who has ag space like that.
And that's the purpose of having the committee is with that, that it's us as the public or the public that will, you know, the decide, the counselors that will decide how much value do we want to put on something, you know, because you sit there and go, okay, someone that's farming, that's a separate program. And the other thing is when it goes into open space, it's never looked at, like, you know, it's not looked at again. There's no criteria to go back through and say, hey, are they really doing with the land what we thought they were going to be doing with it? Whereas in farm and ag, and every few years we're auditing, are you still farming, are you still doing this? And I say one of the big challenges and why we wanted to do this was we don't have farm conservation in the county code. So when you have someone that's 80 years old, they go to a rest home and they can't farm anymore, and they don't have any soils that meet any criteria, there's no place for them to go. They just have to come out of, you know, the farm and ag, and then basically pay all the back taxes. And so, and a lot of times, because when that happens, right, if you're in the situation where you got to pay all the back taxes, who can afford a lot of times to pay the back taxes, right? Typically, it's the developer. So actually, what we see a lot of times is people get into this, these situations, they sell the land to the developer, who's then going and develops it in subdivisions, and you lose that land.
Can you say back taxes? How far back do you go to assess taxes?
It goes back 7 years, and Marcy,
you go back 7 years, you pay the additional taxes, so the difference between the market value and the current use value for each year. You pay a 1% interest per month that of those 7 years. If you've only been in five, we're only going to go back 5 years. But a lot of the farm and ag people that we are taking out have been in since the 70s. So we're going back those 7 years, the additional taxes interest. If I find that they're not in compliance through an audit, it's a 20% penalty on top of that. So, and then you're looking at people that are in their 70s. They're fairly low income because they were farming and now they're not.
It feels like we're addressing the wrong issue.
But if we, the issue though is that if we had that farm and ag conservation, they could have gone into farm and ag conservation, decided they're going to go to a retirement home. Somebody comes by, wants to go into farming. They pick up, they bring it out of farm conservation. They go into farm and ag again, and they're farming again. Where right now we don't have that option for them. If they don't qualify for open space, they don't. That option is not there.
See, I think that's the big problem, right? That's the big problem we're trying to fix. It's just as we're trying to fix that problem, that there's a lot of other tools that we can be giving different people.
So why aren't we looking at the option of creating a farm and ag conservation program?
That's part of the public benefit rating system.
That would be
part of the public benefit rating system. It's just like, because that was kind of the impetus to say to work on the public benefit rating system. So, but as we're developing, there's all these other things that we need to look at, because everything in open space would need to move over into the public benefit rating system. And so it's like, well, if you're going to do it, right, you might as well find out what other tools, what other needs people have that we can put in there to also deal with the other issues and, like, say, more tools in someone's tool belt that they can use to work with.
So one of the issues we're struggling with right now is developers that decide to put in a park, and it's nobody's definition of a park except for the developers. And they said, and you know, they want to claim credits for that park. Could this become part of the solution for that type of thing, that it becomes rated as far as?
That's a good question.
So it would be providing public access. But would there be any taxable value to that property? So these are like pocket parks. They're correct. Little remainder tracts in. And my understanding is they typically don't have a lot of taxable value to
them. Well, our HOA does pay taxes on the one plot that is the park.
Oh, okay.
And it's not much of a park.
So that could be a benefit to whoever is the owner of those pocket parks.
So your HOA pays taxes on that park, Barbara?
Huh?
Your HOA pays taxes
on that? Our HOA does pay. Okay. It's not much.
So there's a place.
Because there's not a building, but there is equipment and such on it.
Right.
And walking trails, etc.
So you can see where.
I only know that because I sat on the board.
Yeah. So you can conceive a situation where in Barbara's neighborhood, the developer's aware of this, puts in a park that actually ranks higher, and now the HOA isn't paying the level of tax, so it could have that attempt
situation. Well, the other thing too is you could have, it's like, okay, so they want to have their park, but it's just for people in our neighborhood. Maybe that's 10% off, but if it's a park that's opened up to everyone, maybe it's 20% off.
Yes,
so there's different things that we can put together in a public benefit rating system.
I love that because that answers their question. Because I've been working on a subcommittee with Deeb on this, and I have stated unequivocally that in my neighborhood, they're very defensive and they don't want to let other little kids in to play. And I say that is no public benefit if it's only for a home residence, you know. So no, you don't get any credit for that.
Yeah, there's two aspects to that. I think we need to look at, or we'd like for you guys to look at, is that, you know, if it's a private park or a private use, you know, they as a public benefit, they should get no points.
Well,
you know,
I like the fact that he said they get a little tiny one.
Well,
because that answers the issue. Okay, because they're coming back at us, right, Kelsey, saying, oh, but we're servicing the people in this neighborhood.
Yeah.
And that means that they don't. Which, of course, we all know that that doesn't work, but it does have some validity. So by giving them a small token with this program, that would really speak to that.
Well, I think we can obviously mirror or work with the public benefit rating system to get a point system or whatever we discuss. The second thing is I want to make sure that you guys look at, as you just had the original scenario, you know, a farmer decides to get out of the development or get out of the farming business. I witnessed this several times because I did some work in California where a farmer would go and say, I'm selling my property to a developer because this is my 401k, essentially is the way they characterize it, right? So, but if somebody has come in already and put a trail through there and a stream through there, you know, I want to make sure that it stays through the transaction, because then the developer can't turn around and reorient everything, because a farmer or somebody that owns a big plot of land is more likely to give the nice part that, you know, to the equestrians or to the, you know, through the land, and developers look at that as, oh my goodness, this is a value add to my property, but only if I can use it certain ways. So,
and I think that comes to the point where, this is exactly what we're looking for, as you guys give feedback.
Sure.
Is maybe it is like, hey, you only get that if you give us an easement that runs through it.
Absolutely.
That's exactly the kind of feedback we're looking for.
Okay.
I would
you know, we're...
Building trails is not cheap. Yeah. And if we put a trail through there, we don't want it to be for 5 years or whatever.
Well, and the public's still going to show up.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the other problem. Yeah. You can say this trail's closed, but people are still going to go there.
Yeah.
And so how
does that runs with the land is key.
How do we give you input? How would you like to see this input?
So I also would like to ask that you guys really study the that you're not adversely impacting individuals who already have a certain benefit established with the county now under their system. So really being sensitive to homeowners or landowners now that have a certain expectation of what they have an agreement with the county that that's not in jeopardy with this program.
See, here's one of the challenges, and that is that the way our property tax system works is I'm given a set amount to collect. So when people get tax benefit, that doesn't decrease any of the amount of money that comes into the government. That money is taken and distributed amongst the rest of the taxpayers to pay. So part of the challenge that we do have, like I say, with people that are in open space, I mean, golf courses get the same rate, you know, on their land as, you know, someone that's farming. It's really more of a commercial activity, but because the way it works, and it's like, basically, the public benefit rating system gives us more control over to decide.
I understand. So people who are currently under your system have a certain expectation of an agreement that they've made with the county. And the thinking is, or my question or my concern is, ensuring that those individuals that we've made those agreements with, we don't renege on those agreements and go, hey, by the way, we're going to change our mind about that. And you're going to have to start paying taxes on X, Y, and Z because we wanted to go to a public rating system and we don't value what you value anymore. I mean, so whatever we do going forward is one thing, but whatever we've agreed to with people in the past and keeping those commitments, I think, is of value to investigate.
Well, let's say that's really for the council to decide, because that's all going to be part of it when it comes about, and that really will be, that's a council decision.
Rebecca,
but it's a recommendation, I guess. I would like hard work to make to you.
And I'm sure that they would consider their integrity before they redid on anything.
Right. And I was going to ask Rebecca, because you've been doing a lot of the research on this and other counties have transitioned to this public benefit system. Have there been, I'm sure there have been discussions like this.
Is there a transition process for...
It takes a few years to get it to run through. We're going to have to do scenarios once we decide on our percentages. And part of what this board and Kevin's group, you know, they're tasked with is giving us a high-low, you know, medium-high-low. How does this impact our county? How important is it to our county? You represent, you know, people in our county. So we need that high, low, medium so that we can start doing our percentages, and then we'll do test calculations within properties in the county. We'll pick some test calculations and just see really what that looks like and see what we can do to, I mean, we're going to have to make some adjustments. And there's also bonus categories and certain things that we can add.
I think a key thing to understand, too, is that Clark County is very unique in the fact that it costs the most to come out of current use in this county, because the way you determine current use rate is based upon farm income and farm land rental, which in this county is very low, right? There's not a huge demand for farm and people wanting to pay rents. If you have something like Franklin County, you know, the current use value, what the rents of a farm bring, is about the same as its market value, right? So there's a lot of these farm communities, people aren't even in it because it's not that great of a benefit. But in Clark County, we have very low rents and very high market values. And so what happens is then when people come out, it's so expensive. In essence, for a lot of these people, if they could come out and pay a little bit more in property taxes and actually lessen the burden when they do decide to take it out, for a lot of them that would be a benefit, because it is, there is such a huge difference, and that does, you know, create a problem. Like when Erickson Farms, when we took him out, and say one of the other challenges in the program is they had been in there for so long, the value of the land got so high back in 2006-07, right, when it was so much demand for subdivision land, that by the time they took it out, the market crashed, was like 2012, and it was one of those ones where they were forced to take it out. The cost to take it out, because it had been worth $1 million within that last 7 years, was $195,000 on land that we basically had valued at $250,000. So basically that back taxes and everything was taking up everything. And so in essence, even if people can increase their taxes, but it's a way to move people to something else that they can do. Maybe they're going to pay more in taxes, but they won't necessarily have to incur all the back taxes that they're currently getting. And so that's really what the benefit is for people that are currently in these systems is, yeah, you may pay a little bit more in taxes, but when you do decide to do something, you're not going to be hit with such a bill when you're trying to bring it out. As I said, it's 1% per month, that's 12% a year, plus the 20%. I mean, 7 years, so when you're back 7 years, was 96%, right, that you're basically paying on that 1 month. I mean, that's a significant amount of a bill that these people are getting. Say we have bills like, you know, we have one about the other day, about $1 million. We have one that's right dealing with coming out that's...
I have somebody that it comes in every time they do a phase, they're doing about 10 phases, and it's coming out about $60,000 to $70,000 a phase every time they're going up in Ridgefield. And that's only going to go up because they're taking their time and it's getting up into being their residential is valuing it as prime land. So that's just going to keep going up as they take
it. I'm not so concerned about people who are selling their divisions for a profit. I'm more concerned about that family who's farming their land that all of a sudden they didn't have a tax, and now we come to them and say, we're not going to give you the same reductions, and so we're going to tax you now. And that family who's is struggling, I mean, their option is then sell and develop.
Well,
and
so no,
then we're
adversely
affecting our open space.
See, here's the thing. It's like you said, the one that, as long as they're farming, none of this touches who's farming.
They're too old. They can't. I mean, I can envision, I don't know. I'm worried about that family who doesn't want to get out, and now you're going to tax them.
But see, here's the challenge. Here, and it's kind of a choice. Let's just say their taxes go up 20%. Would they rather move into something where their taxes go up 20% and they can keep their land, or do they want to take it out, have it taken out, which is currently what happens, pay market rent in taxes, complete, right, pay 100% of the market value in taxes, in addition have a bill of $60,000-$70,000. See, that's what they're facing now, is going from nothing to paying 100% of the taxes on 100% of the value of the land, plus penalties. And so we're trying to add into a system where you can move into that, yeah, maybe your taxes will go up, but you're not incurring the penalties and everything else that you would have if you were doing farm and ag.
Is there any danger, Matt, of encouraging somebody to take out, say my family's actually a great example, where we've got ag land, we're farming it, mostly just hay, and we actually got some ways to rent some, which I was really excited about.
Well, I'd love to find out what you rented it for, but so.
I'm just excited that somebody's using the land. Yeah. The rent rate we're getting is all but zero.
Yeah, exactly. So, that's what drives our current use value of the land down to...
But in my family, I'm the only one in my family that is really interested in farmland.
Yeah.
If they were able to take it out, and who knows what they would do with it. My fear is encouraging or providing a disincentive to maintaining ag land, because that's really what we want, is to
that's what I'm hearing.
We want to keep. We miss these farms that have gone away.
But the farm. So we're offering the farm and egg conservation in the PBRS as an alternative to the farm and egg for someone
and that's still going to be the highest level of.
In the farm and egg, those values will still be determined as they always have. It is not going to be farm and egg itself, where you have to be commercially farming, is not part of the PBRS.
Right. Well, where I'm worried is the farm and egg still going to be the highest incentive level? And of course, that's probably what I just need to hear is that somebody like my family, because I'm working against my brother here, is still really best off if they keep doing what they're doing.
It's still going to be valued the same way with the same determining it through the rents in the same way we've always been determining it. Because farm and egg is a benefit to the county in that if you are farming and creating food or fiber or whatever you're creating as a farmer, it's a benefit to the county. That we still have people creating food and things to feed the people of the county. So that's not going to change.
You guys are going to have a tough time explaining this.
I feel like we've Shanghai'd their presentation.
Well, how much? What are we doing for time?
We need to kind of move.
Can you go through the matrix quickly for us? The different options.
Let's give you 10 more minutes, and then we'll have to move on.
We're in the early stages of development, right? Mm-hmm. So these are good comments and questions to hear from you, because if we're hearing it from you, we're going to hear it from the council, we're going to hear it from the general public. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's the impact to me as the taxpayer when I have my land in open space if this new system rolls in? Am I going to have higher taxes when it's all said and done? Or is there a way to grandfather my enrollment in open space as we move forward? And then if it were to come out or it sells, then you know there's a way to jump into the new system. So those are all good questions that we have to figure out as a committee and make a recommendation to council, which we're like a year away from that. So
it'll be next year.
At this point, what we're focusing on really is, do we have all the right categories that are important to this county? Are they defined appropriately? And what is their value to us or to the citizens?
And don't worry about the percentage right now.
Yeah,
high, medium, low.
I think we would want to bring this back to you guys in the future once we have more of that defined. So at this point, if you could give us input on the categories that we have showing here and their definitions, and if you think there's anything missing or anything that's not really important, take it off the list.
Okay. So let's start from the top. We're looking at trail leakages. And do we have that? So the criteria that we have gleaned from both King County and our own group, did you mesh the criteria?
Yeah, there's a little bit of...
it looks like you may have.
Pirating from King County's list and definition, mm-hmm. and then mm-hmm. knowing what is important to us, mm-hmm. and
This is land that's privately owned. We've talked about it a bit already. It allows the general public off-road trail linkages, bicycle, pedestrian, equestrian. The mapping for it, there are some existing trails. So our mapping, our GIS is the system that we use to help value our properties. And it's important that we're able to map these things so that we can easily translate that to value. It is potentially doable in our system. We just have to tweak things.
So there's an established trail, and you have a property where you're in a subdivision or something, and you're able to provide public access through your property mm-hmm. to get onto this, say like the Salmon Creek Greenway Trail. So this would be an opportunity where that person could potentially get a tax benefit by allowing the general public to walk through their property.
Now, would the easement attach to this?
I think we would have to have an easement for these kind of things.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes,
it would run with the land. It would be in perpetuity if they ever sold it. The next person would have that in their chain of title.
Yeah.
And did you want us to rank that high, medium, or low? Is that what you're asking?
Well, wait, but ultimately we need that.
Ultimately we need
ultimately,
that.
But no, yeah.
Not necessarily today. We don't not need you to vote today, okay, but I need you to mull it over as far as when you look at what else is on this page.
So I have a question. Why wouldn't we just purchase that trail linkage versus giving someone a tax credit in perpetuity?
Because maybe people don't want you to take their land.
But if we have an easement in perpetuity that you can't remove, what's the difference? Yes.
Well, you see, you may not be able to purchase that land, because by doing so, by purchasing that land, you may actually create what's known as an illegal lot. Yes. It may be then the parcel may actually be too small for the zoning, and when you make a, if something's too small for zoning, and then you make that parcel more non-conforming, if it's not already non-conforming to zoning, and you make it more non-conforming, that is what's defined as an illegal lot. So you could be creating an illegal lot, which then can't be sold, and you get people into a huge mess.
Who takes care of these
easements? Our HOA, Jennifer, our HOA has an existing trail through it that goes along Whipple Creek, and they might want to give us a little benefit for that.
So who maintains the access then? Would it be the property owner who decides the easement?
That would be a discussion with the property owner at the time of establishing the easement. I would think that if it became part of our parks trail system, then we would maintain it.
Well, it could be the city.
Garbage. I'm just thinking of things like garbage and things get left there and graffiti and all the little pieces and parts and hidey holes and all those things that you want to avoid.
As far as the sale versus easement, effectively what you're doing is you're buying a property without having to spend money. It's the entire population, because he's still levying the same tax. It's all of us are buying that easement without actually having paid the tax for it.
Yeah, because there isn't less tax collected.
Yeah.
It's just that value is then distributed out to the rest of the people.
It's an invisible property sale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which actually kind of sounds bad.
It's a great feeling that we wouldn't have to go through and buy lots of easements, because that would literally double the cost of an easement system we'd like to put in that place. Question also, would that also apply to commercial and industrial lands if we're trying to put a trail across those, or if we're trying to establish, say, football courts? There's a lot of models out there where in between these big monstrous buildings, they've constructed soccer fields, baseball fields, football courts, basketball courts. So seems to me that that would be applicable as well. So there's a lot of opportunities out there.
So that's one of the next one down is public recreation area. So these are just lands that are devoted to providing some active or passive recreation. And that's a good example of that. There's a soccer field on this commercial property that is open to the general public.
Yeah, H.P. Fuller is a great example. That's been in the public holding for many years now. So they're getting benefited by that, it sounds like. But then there's also churches that we've worked with too, as far as putting soccer fields. But they're already exempt, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're getting benefit.
Only the first 5 acres.
Ah, okay.
So are we interested in going down the list? Okay, so the next one is the easement, and it kind of, the easement itself. So it helps with, it's critical for trail linkages, for a trail system identified in the regional bike and trail plan. So we were thinking bike and trail plans, it's conceptual right now, is what I'm reading here.
A lot of times it is conceptual, but we do have some master plans for some of our trail systems. Chilachi Rail Trail is one of them.
Yeah, we've got several trails that actually bisect the county and in the urban unincorporated area especially.
And so I'm seeing this note, liability to the property owner may be assumed by the county. So does that mean that if something were to happen on that trail, that we would be liable for it?
I would hope so, and not the property owner.
I think that would be the most natural.
No one's going to do that then.
Right.
I just wanted that clarified. Okay. So public recreation area, it kind of ties back. We have a couple places where we have public. So if you notice at the bottom, there's a public access. So kind of the bonus categories are there for those unique situations where, you know, we really can't put it in a category, but we'd like to give them some sort of like a small exemption. The bonus categories can be smaller amounts. And maybe there's just a situation where somebody's just offering something to the public and it benefits them, so that's public access.
That kind of speaks to my question mm-hmm. about the developer doing a little pocket park.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we would need something in there to keep Joe Blow to say from saying, "Yeah, my front yard's open to anybody who wants to use it." And
there's still a process that you have to.
Yeah. You have to apply.
Here's one that we don't have on there, but we've talked about in there, and I don't know exactly any. But we may have a trail that runs through, and you may have then properties that are on that trail. And maybe the trail's all treed, right? Well, we may sit there and want to say, hey, we'll give you a benefit. You get the benefit as long as you don't cut down your trees, right? Because you have a nice wooded trail, all of a sudden you get one of the person like, I'm taking them all down and I'm building this, right? That kind of wrecks the aesthetics of the trail that you're looking. So, I mean, those are different things that we can put in there and
right.
give people credit
the
for.
The county takes care of the trees.
Yes, right.
They're expensive.
Okay, so our next one is the forest stewardship. So
this one's on the list. I'm not sure that we actually need it.
Right.
Because we already have designated forest lands.
Right.
And we have current use timberland, and I don't know if there's any discussion internally about just adopting designated forest lands as the forest conservation tax category for the county.
Oh, that's
that's kind of separate.
That's another thing that we
did.
One of the things that happened is that a while ago, the legislature took open space, timber, and DFL and says you can combine them into one program. We tried to get that done. It never got written up by legal for us to take it to the council. So we have never got ours combined. And so one of the things we want to do also when the public benefit rating system is combine the two of them, because it does create problems when you got basically two forest land programs. And we won't talk about the public session, but
that's a separate thing. It may not be done with PBRS, at least from
we can't have it written in the list.
Yeah,
we can't have it written in there.
Question about the forest stewardship.
Yeah.
Would that still carry, if we're going to have that in there, would that carry the commercial aspect of it, like designated forest land does?
Potentially. I think so. I'd like to look at how other counties do this.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can certainly get you in touch with any of the counties representatives that mirror your areas. So farm and ag conservation, we talked pretty extensively about the farm and ag piece.
Right.
It creates just that flexibility that we would need to encourage people to keep the land versus selling it off to the highest bidder and breaking it into subplots. And the potential for returning to agriculture. I mean, that value is very high, I think. And you guys can help us determine that. Soil conservation. So we do things by class. Right now, it's tract land that does not contain less than 10 acres. So
this is an existing category.
Yeah, it's an existing category.
I think a question here is, do we need it if we're going to adopt farm and agriculture conservation? Because the intent behind soil conservation is to protect soils in certain categories that are good for farming. So maybe it's not something that we need to keep.
Like I say, it may be something that you want to add because they say, hey, it's more valuable if you keep this stuff as farm maintenance, good soil versus... it's really crummy stuff. I shouldn't be subdivision, but you farmed it, because we have some of those places where it's like, it doesn't grow anything anymore.
Right.
But they want to keep it in because they don't want to pay the cost of bringing it out. So that could be
it could be redefined maybe something that we address in a later time.
Yeah.
We don't necessarily have to use all of these categories in the beginning, and it can certainly evolve as we go forward.
Yeah.
So we need to move along here. Yeah. We're getting kind of bogged down.
Yeah, quick question before we go on. In the open space conservation says that it's been identified in the county's conservation areas acquisition plan. That seems to me to be self-limiting because if something pops up that's not in that conservation plan, archaeological, historical, those types of things.
So we would have archaeological and historical would be covered under a different category.
Yeah. Is that in here?
Yeah. It's
not in that.
Yeah.
Not
it's a different group of people that are working on that. Yeah. Those categories.
Okay.
And so we've been working with the Historic Preservation Commission on those.
And I'm thinking Fish and Wildlife. Fish and Wildlife.
We also would have separate categories that cover those aspects as well. So fish and wildlife, habitat areas, wetlands, other more of the natural conservation areas. That these were just attempting to have a category that fit kind of the generic open space definition, and then knowing that we would have categories for some of those other things that you're talking about. So we're still compiling all of this into a major list of all the different categories, and I think we can have that for you guys at a future meeting.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and maybe that's the approach we take is to give you input, and we can give it to Kevin, but go through this spreadsheet that you've started, and it looks great. Get them up with some definitions. As you stated, identify categories that we think may or may not need to be in and to be addressed.
And I can also give you a list of the categories as a whole that we have, so you can see if they've already looked at those categories and not pulled them over.
Okay.
They're being addressed by another group.
Okay.
And that way you're not
that would be fine. Sure, we like to look at other people's group stuff. We want to review that too.
I understand. That'll cut down on you doing double.
They need our input. I know.
And you could have a perspective that we're not seeing.
Well, and that's exactly right. So, yeah, we'd love to see the full list.
I can give you the full
list. And if you can give that to Laura, she can get it out to the board.
Absolutely.
As a board, we can look at each one of these, kind of compile our thoughts and our categories and get them back to Kevin. And then, as you said, you're starting this process and you're in the data gathering side of it right now from the committee levels and everything else, and so we'd love, and board levels, and we'd love to help you with that. And then we would like for you to come back and present to us when you have a little more framework put together and structure.
Absolutely, because we want your feedback. What is important to you? What's not? And because that will help.
We love to tell you. We love to tell people what we think is important and not important for the park.
Listen more.
Two quick things. First, on this list, I don't see anything about aquatic access.
There is an aquifer category, and there's a wetland category.
So I was thinking more water.
Body of land.
No, that's good.
And then the other thing I wanted to tell Peter, I've actually been emailing back and forth with Marcy and some of your other staff on a land purchase I'm working on. Mm-hmm. And they have actually been really responsive and informative, so thank you guys.
Oh, thank you for letting me know that. Good job. Make sure that's in the record. Oh, okay.
Well, good. I'm glad that was being helpful.
Yeah,
very much so.
You were very helpful today. We really appreciate you coming to us and bringing us up to us. That's great information.
Kind of a tricky topic.
Yeah.
But it's worth doing, I think, and that's what we
wanted. Yes. No,
that was the first thing we wanted from you, is the first overall, is this worth doing in your mind? It's hard to justify it.
Well, we actually can see several applications. Yeah. We've talked among ourselves, and we see several applications from the rating system and the public, you know, some. We just don't have that right now as a public benefit rating system, if you will, for land use or any type of land activities. So you guys are pioneers, and that's great. We'll help you as much as we can through there. So.
We appreciate that.
Thank you for coming.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Okay, so we'll get back to our unfinished business, and you guys are more than welcome to listen. I mean, it's exciting stuff.
Give us your opinion on what you think.
Way to go, John. You got him.
Thanks, John. So.
You got him on the run.
All right. So there's no PIF balance update, I understand. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
All right, no problem.
We're always 1 month behind, right?
All right, and then the Lewis and Clark Trail update.
So Lewis and Clark Trail update, we had a meeting out in Richfield. Again, it was a section 1 and 2, and to discuss yet the alignment one more time with the folks primarily from Department of Fish and Wildlife and from the National Wildlife Refuge. And good discussion, really good discussion. Everybody is very respectful of each other, which I thought was really good. Dan Miller led the meeting, did a great job of really keeping everybody on track and trying to push, you know, to get, basically said, hey, we need to have a trail. Where are we going to put it? You know, how can we make this work? You know, so we really want to stay away from, you just can't do it, right? And we even had Fazio there, who's a pretty significant landowner down there in the lowlands area, and he actually provided some suggestions, which I was really impressed with. So I thought that was really
good. He wants to give us lots of his land to put the trail on? Is that what you're saying?
He actually, yes, he did.
Oh, great.
Some credit.
PBRO system.
Some credit, yeah.
So now we see where this guy's from.
So the one thing that I did notice is that, you know, the National Wildlife Refuge is pretty adamant that we really do not tread on their land. It's a managerial, you know, plan that they do not really want to change at this time. They are, however, in addition to the new bridge that's going across into the S River unit, if you will, where when you come across onto the wildlife refuge, you can actually take the vehicle tour around a loop, you know, so that's, it's a vehicle only, but they are actually introducing on that side public access to come in and actually bring your kayaks in and launch in there. So basically it's a water access that they're putting in place. And you can also walk north on the River S unit towards the Cardi unit, if you will, which is north towards Richfield. So there is a small, they're actually coming around a bit, but they really are pushing us to try to come across to the east of the existing Wash Dot right of way, over onto property that's adjacent to what we own and into our Flume Creek property. So, and so with Flume Creek, there's actually a underpass under the Burlington Northern Santa Fe line that is possible that, you know, we can make that access into there. So still a work in progress. Dan and Brianna Truden from National Park Service are actually going to map that out and show us how that's going to look. And so we think we've gotten to the point where we can actually call this a primary alignment. So that's where we're at. So it was a pretty interesting meeting. We all kind of walked out of there feeling a little bit numb, you know, but we all have our positions where we really want to be, you know. In my position, I want to go right up the middle of that washed out alignment. You know, across and make it the easiest route possible, but we know that can't happen. So, but I think that as long as we had a very good negotiation and we all felt that we had a reasonable solution, I think it was a win-win. Okay?
Everybody's talking to each other still.
Yeah.
All right. Park codes review. That's an ongoing.
Yes, so that's still ongoing. We're still working on that. There's one code that we should probably be thinking about in addition to the, you know, diapers and everything. Possibility of no jumping, diving. That has come up lately. Ahmad himself and our county manager Sean.
Everywhere or Climbline? Where are we talking specifically?
No
Falls. Places where it's potentially dangerous, probably. No jumping or diving, you know, like Mobile Falls Bridge.
We already have
signs up there. There's no codes. There's no RCWs actually addressing that right now. Is that something that we want to do? It's actually probably a council decision. They're actually probably be talking about that. So good for thought. But so we have yet to start really working on revising our codes. A lot of it's cleanup, if you will. I think we'll probably work on that during the winter months.
Yeah.
I guess. So we're actually getting towards that right now. So we need to sit down, buckle down, and actually start working on our county codes, because that's something that needs to be done.
Yeah, because I want the swim diaper thing taken care of before summer.
Before the next swim.
Yes. I want Climbline to stay open and kids to quit pooping in it. Like, right. This is exactly. Very small goals, I feel. Like,
it is. Yeah. I mean, and we don't have water that flushes it away, so it all takes is one incident and
closes
Climbline bond is down.
Yeah.
And now we're going to. So.
Okay.
So
is it feasible timeline by next spring, you think?
I think, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that it's, you know, we can actually make our edits to the county code,
uh-huh.
and then we'll vet it through this process with our parks board, and then we'll go after it. So, Amanda, is there anything else we need to do once we decide what our language is going to change to the process thereafter? And we just go through a typical hearing process, correct?
Yep.
Okay.
It has to be public hearing, just so that we only get public comments for an ordinance, and then
so
it's 10 days later.
I want to have been
okay. So once we get established, we'll probably likely do a work session with the council, and then go into a hearing.
Okay.
Get it ratified. Okay.
All right. So is Eric kind of spearheading that?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I guess so. He started it, so. So I don't know. I think Jeremy and I and Eric and staff, and then we've already got some input. I know John gave us some input some time ago. We've got those notes and everything. So we've got notes from. We just got to dust it off, get it together, and push it forward. Mm-hmm. So I think we can do it over the course of this winter time. So,
Eric started it as a cleanup effort, and you want to clean it up even
now
more.
Now we're ruining his life with drones and diapers.
It's hard to make sure we don't go too far. So.
How do you write poopy diapers or not?
Yeah.
In a legal way.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's got that circle and
All right, field trips. Multnomah Falls was discussed on the 19th, and also the 19th is the All-PAB meeting.
All-PAB, yeah.
So that might be
not starting yet.
So basically, the idea was to go up, look at the Moulton Falls Trail or Hentwick Trail, if you will, and look at the trust line transfer and the remember we had the discussion about the Michigan Trotter timber harvest with DNR, and we have the trust line transfer kind of working right now. We're looking at the trail itself, the corridor going up 200 feet above, and I believe Hunter has got that all flagged out.
Yeah.
We're just going to go up and taking just a visual of it. What would that look like? What does that 200 foot corridor look like from the trail surface itself? And so that was kind of
the accessibility on that.
What's that?
Is that accessible or?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
And I'm hoping that we can actually probably drive a bit of that.
So I can come.
You can come. If, I think as long as we have.
Well, I get tired of sitting in the car, you guys.
I know. So we talked about that. We've got to figure out.
I know we can still drive
some way to get out there.
We can drive a one ton up until the entire stretch. I'm pretty sure we can. I got to talk to our maintenance guys. But if that's the case, then we can actually probably drive a small van up there as well. So
I would think so.
Well, that's a question. I don't know if the day and the time is going to be okay. We have the All-PAB meeting on the very same day.
There's no
so that might be a conflict for a lot of folks. I don't know. Should we change the day? Possibly.
Probably. That way we wouldn't, for those that can't spend the whole day on parks.
And I know Sybil has to come along with us, and I think she's got a conflict already too, right? Mm-hmm. And so,
and I've either got to go on the trip or go to All-PAB. I can't do both.
Right.
So, if there's another day, another time, I don't know if you guys want to do a morning meeting or a morning trip, we can do that. Let me know what your preferences are, you know, the one that we can most of us can make it too.
Do we want to push it off to the next Friday?
Yeah,
that would be possible.
Yeah. Sure. What's the next Friday?
I think it's
be the 26th.
We have our agenda planning meeting.
Oh, yeah, that's a trunk retreat at school. But that's not till evening.
Can't go the 26th.
Or a Thursday is better.
How about a Thursday?
Yeah, Thursday
the whole time.
Exactly. Yeah, Thursday would be better for me too.
25th?
Oh, Thursday, 25th.
The 25th. Oh, I can't look at my calendar, but Thursdays are usually better than Fridays for me. So.
That work for most of you?
I think so.
Yeah. That'd be great.
Everybody in Bilton go.
What time would we want to do that?
One day or the other,
What time is best?
Okay.
Why don't we do our morning time, our 10 o'clock morning time? That works good.
I'm out on Thursday mornings, but I haven't been able to make one yet, so don't go around me. My Thursday mornings are not available.
Thursday afternoon work better for you?
Not for me, because I can't get the girls.
Well, yeah, I'm with you. I have to be
home. Yeah,
two mornings then. Good morning.
Thursday
is
the
20th. FaceTime me in.
And we'll show you. Yeah, we'll put it on Instagram and let it like go back and forth or whatever.
I still swear we're going to get those GoPros and take me along. We still got to work on that.
Yeah, we had a
bad idea.
The battery was dead.
I know.
So, okay. Does that sound reasonable?
Yeah, I think that's more than reasonable. Yeah.
Bill, would you like Hunter to meet you guys out there?
That would be great. Yes.
And what time is the LPAB on the 19th?
At 4 o'clock.
4 p.m.
On the back side of your agenda.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, 4 to 7 at the Lacamas Lake Lodge.
It's a long meeting.
Dinner included on that?
I don't know.
Snacks,
I believe. Yeah, she said they were going
to have snacky doodles. They're going to have snacky doodles. Okay, all right.
Yeah, she said not like our dinner, but she said they'd have snacky doodles.
Light or
not
doodles.
Like Barbara's and so. Kelly's.
Well, it was Bill that
cook it.
Pasta and lasagna, right?
Yeah.
Set the bar high, you guys. You got to keep the
teams. Which reminds me, it's probably coming up. They'll be asking at this one for the next one. Isn't it about our turn chairs? Because Richfield's done it, Battleground's not going to do it because they talked with them the last time, and they just don't feel they have the resources to host.
They don't have anybody.
But you know, they come every time.
Yeah.
So you know, given that Camus has done it, Washougal's done it, I think we're next up if we want to volunteer.
How about the city? Can they host it?
They already did theirs.
We did
the big tour of the waterfront.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. I think we're next up.
Okay, we can discuss
rotation.
That. Yeah, we can discuss that. That would be good. Look at that. Okay, community liaison update.
Laura sent an email.
Yeah.
Info opportunities.
All the volunteer opportunities, and then there's the Blueville.
Mm-hmm.
Looking for anybody who might want to be a volunteer. So that registration form is also in the packet.
Okay. We're moving on. Dog Paw, any new updates?
I haven't heard a word.
I haven't either.
I haven't heard anything from Mitch Nichols either. So it's been pretty quiet out there.
Well, let me reassure you, the city hasn't heard word either. Because they're not discriminating against the county.
So we're just going to assume the dog parks are running as normal? That's the assumption?
Yeah, they're still
Doing it. Yeah, they haven't heard anything different.
Exactly. Well, somebody's doing something.
There's a group of folks, about 80 of them, who are volunteering right now and trying to keep them running purposefully.
Okay.
They actually want to take over, if you will. Not a coup, but they actually would like to take over with the name Dog Pops.
It's possible.
We don't know where it's going, and we have no representatives to actually get in touch with right now. So I'm hoping that somebody's going to surface here real soon and start talking to us about. That's what, when Mark Watson disappeared, he was basically the voice of Dog Pup. So, I don't know.
Remind me again, we have a contract with them.
We have contracts for each and every site.
Okay,
so
and
we
it's
have,
rotating.
It's a lease, if you will, a long-term lease.
Right.
So in that, they have a performance, you know, to maintain those each and every off-leash area and keep them up. You know, the one that we actually jointly share expenses with is the Pacific or Dakota Pacific Park. So we pay to pick up the dog poop. Our maintenance staff actually mows it and does things like that. So. But the other sites are actually up to dog spot to maintain, and they actually have done a really good job in the past, so for many years, in fact. So I did hear that the city of Vancouver is hopefully introducing a new site behind the Target. At the Van Plaza. I'm hoping that's going to be the case.
Yeah.
The city of Vancouver desperately needs one of their own. I'd love to see that happen. So it would take a lot of pressure off of our other off-leash areas. So we'll see where that goes.
Okay. Development and Engineering Advisory Board update.
I have Eric's list of demands. Shall I read them?
Well, let's kind of put it in context. We met with Eric, who was the only one, Eric Guillermo, who was the only one that attended from the deep side. Went through several items. We had tried to focus on creating some goals, you know, one or two goals. They had, to update everybody, Deeb had 10 items, 10 goals, 10 issues they had, wanted to go through. There's been some email correspondence back and forth between Eric and us, and Laura's been great about getting information out. We're trying to get them as educated as possible. My sense is that they're kind of backing off of the rolling back or adjusting the PIF fees. They're more focusing on what goes into or what is accounted in our different categories and PROS plans, because they're still, their big push is they want to get credit for their smaller pieces. We'll call it a pocket parks. I also mentioned to him that he probably ought to stop using that terminology. We ought to come up with a common terminology that doesn't have a negative connotation. Because you say pocket parks, so a lot of people know, and they go, I don't want to talk about it anymore, and, you know, everything else. But we haven't come up with that yet, and he was kind of slightly offended that
he didn't suggested like that. Word. Like,
but anyway,
developer sponsored parks.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we all gave and took on some discussion points, and I think one of the key factors is they realize there's probably maybe 20% of their developments, the PUDs, the bigger ones, are the ones that this really affects. Mm-hmm. The smaller guys, the 10 and 12 lots, the other stuff,
they're just paying the fees.
They're just going to pay the fees. Yeah. You know, this is really not a systemic thing through the whole development community and systems. And he openly admitted that there is some developers that are more adamant about it than others. And they're really not developers as much as they're the builders, because the builder's the one that pays the fee. So, but they keep harping on the affordable housing and all that great stuff. So, go ahead and
okay, so here's the things that, and Jay and I were in favor of one of these things, and we were not so much in favor of others. So we're looking for the board's voice so we can go back to them and say, all right, we talked to the whole group, and here's where
have
we're
a
at.
Consensus on some things.
So one of the things, at least that I'm open to listening to, is, and I think Jay is too, this, what we're classifying as the size of a park. So I think a lot that we've been talking about, maybe neighborhood parks don't need to be 8 acres anymore. That's really, really big. And that's, it's expensive for us.
It's expensive to maintain.
It's harder to find those pieces of land. So maybe if we started buying smaller pieces of land, we could have more money left to develop the parks faster, which I think if we bought a 4-acre, you know, neighborhood park and were able to develop in 2 years instead of buying an 8-acre park, depleting the fund and waiting to build the PIF back up, and those people waiting 9 years for a park, that sort of thing. So that's something we're open to talking about in the next comp plan, is what is our vision of parks going forward.
In the next comp plan.
Well, maybe adding an additional category.
Correct.
Yes.
Or instead of eliminating the three, you know, that we've got now, the community, the regional, and the neighborhood, instead looking at adding an additional classification.
Or that, yes.
Because I think that there are still, when the opportunity is there, I think that for a lot of the neighborhood parks, that's a really nice size. Especially when you get into the densely populated areas. Looking at, you know, eight acres really is not that large when you're looking at having trails around the perimeter and like that.
Sure.
And when we have the opportunity to do that, I'd like to see that sustained.
Yeah, we're not trying to limit anything.
Yeah,
we're just
sure.
trying to expand.
But I do see the need for an additional category.
Making something else.
Right.
Yeah.
In addition to what we've got, I'd be really supportive
agree.
Of that.
I like that idea better than changing the scope of what we're doing. So that's one thing that they're really keen on doing. The other thing, which I'm having a hard time, Eugene, you helped me fill this in, is with the PIF credits for trails. So they really advocated hard to have that as an option. But they're very against it costing them any more in PIF credits. But we've been explaining to him that that's
even though that's what the numbers calculated out, that it would be an increase. So, we're not going to increase.
So I kind of understand what he's saying. He's an engineer, much like me. So we look at the calculation, not the result. So if you look at the calculation, in your presentation, Bill, it says the trail will add a factor of X dollars or X, you know, impact.
They don't come free.
And we've stressed.
Was that PowerPoint presented to them at that meeting?
It was, yes.
Yeah. Okay, I'm just trying to and we stress with Eric that, yes, it shows that, but what we're going to do is include it in the existing PIF fee. We're not going to increase the PIF fee. What I think he's looking for is down the road, when we release all this stuff and the PIF fee becomes the PIF fee again, if you will, the trails will add a cost to it. And so that was kind of our discussion point, but we weren't going to go past the point of, look, at this time, as far as we can see, which is next year, if you will, it will be included in the existing PIF fees, and the existing PIF fees will not be increased due to the trail. And he said, well, that's fine, but it shouldn't be included, or it should be not additive. And I'm
just add it to the definition.
Yeah.
Well,
and you can't blame him. He's
told
us. But it's illogical because we all know you don't get it for free.
Right.
And we can't sustain it at no cost.
Well, but we got to be a little careful, too, because when we say, oh, well, we can add the trails and not increase the PIF fee, well, then are you charging too much for the PIF fee now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That, you know, I mean, that's what he could
do. Yeah, and we all know
that. When our consultant went out there, and there's several other jurisdictions within Washington State, actually in Clark County as well, that have trails included with their PIF fees. There actually is a calculation addition into to include trails.
Right.
So it's an interesting dynamic because we are gauging our PIF fees off of acquisition and development costs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And on a per capita basis.
Right. Right.
So with regard to trails, it's a little bit different because we're actually calculating that off of the actual projects that we have in our PROS plan, the capital facilities plan. So there's $10 million worth of projects. That's how we evaluated the cost on that, you know, the acquisition and development. So it comes to $68 per capita or per person. And in a household, average is like 2.34 people per household. So it's like $128,
right,
you know, an addition. So anyways, so it's kind of an interesting dynamic. We've been proposing it because we're in the middle of a PIF increase right now. We're in year two of a three-year increase, that we decided we would waive that increase until after those increases were taken care of. So probably the earliest we would see it would be in 2020, all right? So, but at that time, the question came up, and by the way, we presented to BIA, you know, where Eric Galimo is also the chair of that board. So they were very curious as to, okay, if we're not going to establish that increase right now for trails, when are you? So the answer was after the other increases are done, essentially.
Right.
Did he also say the market is soft?
What's that?
Did he also say the market?
He said it's softening, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So,
oh,
yeah. But we also mentioned that, you know, we are heading towards our next PROS plan update.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And so they asked how often we take a look at PIF increases, and we can do it as frequently as once a year if we want to, but it's pretty cumbersome. I mean, we've got to hire a consultant to go through all this. Or we can typically do it when we update our PROS plan. So I would say that we'd probably take a hard look at it again in the year 2020 or 2021, because we absolutely have to get it done. So that's the short answer, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. Or maybe a long answer.
I think also when I finish this list, we should talk about the things that we've steered against, too.
Sure.
Because I think that's an important piece of where we're at in our negotiations. I think three and four are pretty much the same. So they're really caught up on, he and Steve Bacon from the first meeting are really caught up on inventory. What are we counting as recreational space and what are we not? So their favorite example is schools. schools. So Eric's favorite example specifically, if you're familiar with the area, is Geyser.
Yeah.
Okay, so he says that there's a public park component to Geyser, which he claims no one is ever in. And then there's the recreational school component, which he said on the weekends and after school is full of kids. And that we are doing a disservice essentially to the development community by not counting how much that is utilized as a recreational opportunity. And it's making PIF fees higher because we're not counting that towards the level of service that.
Because our acquisition rate, yeah.
Yes. So they are, I mean, here's one thing we steered them against, though, is going back and looking at inventory of private parks and development. They wanted us to go back and look at development parks to count that towards level of service. We pretty much said that is an absolute no-go. We have expressed our concerns repeatedly that we don't like counting schools, and I said, schools are not accessible for the general public between like 7:30 and 4 for the most part. They're closed.
And when we are using them for school. Sports and after school activities right. and rentals yeah. to the community.
And his response was, why do kids need parks when they're in school during school hours? And I said, it's so sweet that you only think children use parks,
right.
but
right.
there are people of all ages who use parks. So, but in their head, it's kind of like the development community builds a pocket park, for lack of a better term, in their development. That's for their residents. So kids are in school. Why do they need to play in a park? Because they're in school. They should be learning. So that is the discussion of the emails
what
we had
about only children use.
Well, I said, well, it's so weird. For like 5 years when I was going insane as a stay-at-home mother with preschoolers, I went to the park every day. Like, I would have died without a park close to my house. And his thing is, well, you can drive to other places. Well, that's true. I can drive, but, you know,
if
I wanted to really just go into, well, I was breastfeeding twins, and it was very stressful. It was really
exactly.
And then I could just walk down the street.
As you said, you know, only if you're privileged enough to have a car. Only, and his response was, well, you know, we've got to get housing costs down. And Barbara made the great point, and it does every time we have this conversation. As soon as the concrete guy lowers his prices, the wood, the framers lower their prices, we'll be glad to lower our prices.
They think we're overcharging for a variety of ways. One, in his mind, he... And I'm saying this because he's kind of the spokesman of the group.
Right, right.
He's raised prices for his business 30% in the same time period we raised PIF increases 154%. And so to him, we are overreaching right now. And so he wants justification
for the last 8 years when we didn't raise the park fee and we continued to raise it.
13 years.
Go back and have him do that calculation because I guarantee you he is greater than 150% increase in his fees compared to what we've done over
the last year. No, he says that he's making it up on volume.
That's a lot of work.
I agree.
We all know what statistics are.
Sure.
We can make them look however we want them.
Correct. So, kind of the, I mean, as a board, in our negotiations going forward as a subcommittee, how do people feel about opening what we count as inventory? Are we?
Well, I guess the first question is there some areas that we can open up
for discussion?
Well, what's common ground on that issue? There's going to be some kind of a common ground. Let's start with
the common ground is to make is to create a second or a third, fourth category, I guess, below the neighborhood park size. All right, neighborhood parks. This was the first statement ever made in front of Deeb was, you know, do you know what the size of a neighborhood park is? It's 2 acres. Oh my gosh, it's so huge.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. You know, maybe we can make it a little smaller, make it a little different. But what do you include in that?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we're not going to, you know, and then somebody said, well, you know, we can use the Portland 1 foot square foot park, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, it's just some rationale there is one of the common areas.
From the standpoint of inventory, though,
yes.
What's the common ground on standpoint? There's an acceptance somewhat that schools are used.
Sure, and I would be willing to take that as a percentage. 3 months of the year.
So you should ask schools, because I don't know if schools would.
Because I'm sure you don't want to afford the wear and tear that a public park is supposed to offer.
And I would be against including them.
only in the fact that even during the summertime, they are not 100% accessible. And I'm just thinking specifically of Shinook in my area. And I will tell you that those playgrounds, even that little island in the middle, we developed so it could be leveled out so that your soccer, your football, your baseball, those teams are there practicing all the time. And yeah, we sneak in and go over to the swings sometimes. But really we don't go there because there's so many kids already there with practice. So I don't see any time of the year that the schools really are open to the public and accessible.
I don't disagree with that, Barbara, because I'm a frequent walker of schools at Pacific and Harmony Elementary Schools right back up to my subdivision.
Okay.
And during the summertime, those parks may be different from yours.
It must be.
But they are fairly
yeah.
healthy for having practices. In the fall and the spring, as you head into school, you head out of school, I see practices there very commonplace.
Yeah.
Lacrosse,
yeah.
soccer, all that type of. But in the summertime, those parks are fairly empty. And in those parks, I do see less use than the neighborhood or community park. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's something you can grab there, saying, I don't know if you do density surveys of your parks or demographic surveys, if you use like the trails.
Absolutely.
I know trails are a survey. I don't know if you do something like that at your parks or you can guesstimate that data.
Well,
I think the legitimate.
Well, it must be variable from park to park.
I think that's a legitimate.
So going back to your question, is there any common ground? I don't know that we've hit any common ground, honestly, because on that issue, as far as schools, now other areas, you know, we always have the caveat that it needs to be public access. There has to be public, some type of public access, or there really can't really call it a park or count it as a park. So that's where they're focusing. They're focusing their shift from money and cost to what constitutes a park, because they believe the PIF is being driven by the fact that we have a serviceability of 1.34 acres per thousand and it should be 2.
So I have a question. Why maybe I'm being too exclusive on this, but we have a standard. Builders have a standard for which they build by, and we don't tell them how to build their buildings. And we have a service for which we'd like to provide access, and we have pads, and we have groups, and we have individuals who focus on this type of work, just like they do in the building industry. Why would we let them tell us what our service is when we've done massive outreach to the community? We've gone through plans and studies. We've identified what we think the service levels are based on what our community's input is to this. Why would we have one developer or group of developers, a pocket of people tell us how to modify our service levels in our community because they don't want to pay their proportionate share?
Well, the reason, if you go back to the reason we entered into this whole conversation, is we didn't want Deeb to get in front of the council and get to their ear before we did. We wanted to find out what their issues were.
Yeah.
Believe me, Kelsey and I have not, and Barbara, have not agreed to anything except we'll entertain discussion.
There's been a lot of this.
Well, I think it is important to listen to them, but I'm going to say, and I know Kelly feels very strongly this way as well, and that is the time that we look at our standards and change them is when we do our post plan.
Yeah.
We're coming up on that.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's a good thing to have these discussions before we get to it, because we'll have some good ideas of concerns and expectations of the. But driving change now or moving forward is.
Right. And we have been steadfast in saying we're not going to change anything right now. Let's. You know, except for the trails, which is an open, kind of an open book right at the moment. I mean, if you want to change something, let's look at the trails, and we can focus on that right now. But we really are not amenable to changing anything until we open the pros plan again for change. And that's again,
right.
2020 and that they were not happy about that. But I think they're now realizing that, there was a lot of thought and effort went into this, and so if you want to, there's no real error or some kind of I don't want to use the word mistake or something that just didn't add up, because we have arguments about the schools.
Yeah.
I mean, you can
pro-con all the way across forever and a day. There's no clear-cut answer or clear-cut way to solve this issue. And it's dang sure not going to change the PIF fees. And we've made this point several times because they keep saying every once in a while, doing a head fake of saying, well, let's go back and look. No, we're not going to go back and look at anything. Mm-mm. From here, we will go forward, but what's done is done. And I went back and read their, and thank you for that information, I went back and read their meeting minutes where their proposal, when we made the presentation, or Bill made the presentation on the PIF fees and Laurie Lebowski, they said, well, we want it implemented over 5 years. Mm-hmm. And we said, we were surprised it wasn't. We, being the PAB, was willing to accept a 5-year implementation. But the counselors did 3.
Yeah.
I mean that was...
And they do get to do that.
Yeah.
And then the other thing they were looking at was, again, some of the numbers and what goes into a calculation. And okay. But you had that opportunity when Kelly and everybody was working so hard on the PROS plan. So.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I like the way they said that they weren't included, and you can go back and look at their...
Oh, no, they...
We were there
in their meeting minutes, they had a motion to do that. So
several times we went
so there. So, you know, their fire and brimstone's kind of gone out of there. And you know, and we had a conversation with Eric, and I said, you know, there's one group that really was spearheading this. And there's a movie out, and I can't remember the name of the, well, I can, but anyway, they talk about using their attorneys. And if attorneys, you know, they're like nuclear armament. If you fire off yours and I fire off mine, nobody wins. We've all lost.
Yeah.
So, you know, and he understands that, and he's trying to keep it calm. And I don't know what what the BIA reaction was, because I'm sure they're a big member of that.
You know, I figured they would be the most contentious, if you will, because they're the closest to this, the ones, the developers. But it was actually fairly well received. I mean,
good.
They listened to us. They had a little different set of questions. You know, they want to know when that trail increase would be implemented. You know,
right.
And so, but Eric was going to get back to us with some information which we have not heard yet. But I did see the correspondence that he was asking. And I should actually reply to some of that because I haven't had a chance to yet. I've been busy.
Kelsey,
well, that's why I just kind of gave a generic response.
Yeah.
It wasn't, yes, we agree with all of this. Right. It was just to acknowledge his email and to say, you know, we're going to share that with the board because we do, as a subcommittee, like, I feel like we're just kind of a spokesman for the consensus of what our board feels. And so I just want to make sure... I mean, we're not really into relooking at inventory right now is the answer. And if so, if we do look into it, it will be during our next PROS plan.
Right.
Is that the consensus right now?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
There is one kind of glimmer of hope of another sort of compromise that was suggested. So at the meeting with Barbara, we got into kind of the nuances of if we were to give PIF credits, what would they look like? Would you get like... 1/80% if you put a half-court basketball hoop in your pocket park. And we're still stuck on the maintenance issue. Who's going to take maintenance? So Eric had a really good idea so far that Jay and I were like, this could work. His suggestion was that a developer could choose, and we would set the criteria, to essentially put a percentage of their development into usable public space. So that would cover like the pocket parks, that would cover, I don't know, if they want to put a nature play area in, something of that variety. Mm-hmm. And if it checks off a certain criteria that we create...
It's a matrix criteria that is known and published, obviously.
Yes, that the... And we wouldn't have anything to do with approving it. There would be the... We would approve the matrix or what...
Right.
What
criteria.
But the planning or all the permit stuff, they would say, yes, it meets that designation or no, it doesn't. And if they do, they could get maybe like a percentage off their PIF fee.
the partial credit.
So it would be...
So long as they're not claiming a wetland or something that they...
No.
Well, yeah, that would be the criteria.
That would be the criteria. It can't be a bioswale. Or, like, it would be things that are important to us. Because there is... He is right. I do agree. There is... I drive by some of these, again, sorry, the term, pocket parks, and I'll see 10, 15 kids playing on the playground at them. Some of them that are bigger and better, like, than the bioswale ones. And there is value to that. Mm-hmm. And I think we should pay some credence to that. Like, there is value to that space. That is a small space where people in your park can get together. And this would get rid of the nuances of ticking off all these tiny boxes of, but we'd have to establish, like, what is the size of this? That would be part of the criteria. It can't be in a bioswale. Like, there are things that are at least important to me want to see that would make them accessibility. Is it ADA accessible? I said, best guess, what percentage of the development community would take advantage of a two-tiered PIF system? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's guessing no more than 20%. So I don't think it would really hurt our bottom line in collecting PIFs.
Right.
And it would be a way to forge a relationship with the development community to start making maybe better usable spaces for their neighborhoods and that do add value too.
Well, I also liked his idea of the builder being able to purchase land much cheaper than us.
Yes.
And then donating that to us.
Correct. Yes.
If it meets the criteria.
We had the conversation.
Yeah, not the wetlands.
There's
and
three
even
components.
Acknowledged that they do sometimes try to dump junk on us. Mm-hmm.
We had the conversation. There's three components to a park. There's the acquisition, the development, and the maintenance. And their participation is in acquisition and development predominantly, I'd say 98% of the time.
Yeah.
So they should, if they can, and it fits this criteria, they should.
It's a win-win.
We don't have to absorb maintenance costs. We did talk, like, one of the criteria. It has to be open to the public. It cannot be residents of the neighborhood only, or you cannot receive pretty much a public tax break.
Right.
One thing we have to kind of keep in mind of is, within our standards, we have 2 acres of neighborhood property, 3 acres of community property, and 1 acre of open space. So I noticed in his questions about the Santa Fe Greenway, you know, why aren't we counting more acres?
Yep.
Well, because we count that as open space. And it actually satisfies a huge portion of the open space requirement. So you can actually look at our standard for open space is actually almost being met because of just that one.
Well, and we did not go into that of how, if you start changing how things are accounted for, does that impact the other categories, i.e. open space, you know, anything else? They're solely focused on parks.
You can't really come and count it. I mean, so with neighborhood parks, we count all of it as park property, right? That meets park property, not the open space. With community properties, sometimes, you know, 70% or 80% of it is actually counted as open space because it's undeveloped. It's just wooded area.
Right.
And so Louisville Park or our big regionals like Blackmus Park, you know, I think 70% of that is counted as open space. It's not park property. It's what's developed, what people are, or high impact uses at. That's what we count as park property. So there's a couple of things that have to be understood there.
So we're getting educated on both sides of the discussion.
So have you guys started to look at the planned unit development code in Title 40? So these developers, when they do planned unit developments, they're required to put 12% of their development into open space in order to have the various flexibilities design of their planned unit development. Right? So,
in the density.
So there's criteria for what meets those, and I would encourage you guys to look at
those.
Yeah,
I'm glad you brought that up, because the developer has a lot of benefit already by putting things into their property, and one of them that is not actually written down is livability, an ability to sell the homes. And so if they want to put in row homes, they're going to get a certain price for row homes. And if they want to put in luxury three-story with a pocket park, they're going to get more money. So, I mean, there's just a direct correlation to their benefit already. We can recognize that benefit, which is great or not, whatever you decide to do. But there's this poor me mentality that keeps coming forward. Just old song and dance. Yeah.
So the section of county code is Title 40.520.080. And another thing I was going to say is, if you know, if you can find some of the criteria that they have to meet for that, that also meet your, then I think there is some common ground there. But this, there's also, you know, you can also think about ways to influence that code next time the community development goes through their process of updating the Title 40 section. It's called the biannual code amendments. And if there's some ways to that we could influence that, I think we could work with your planning community.
Your point being that they have to put 12% aside. If they actually make that into a park, everybody wins.
Right.
Yeah.
But it does say they can get credit for stormwater facilities if they don't put a fence around it. But like, do we really want a fence, you know, an unfenced stormwater facility being counted as
That's more what they try to give us all the time.
The freeze is over. It's like hockey on the last
one. All right, so we've gone through this, and do you have anything else? I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, so just for the consensus for our next subcommittee meeting, we're pretty much open to talking about a lot of this once the PROS plan opens.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the consensus?
There you go.
Okay. Yep. But we're pretty much in agreement, like inventory, not up for discussion right now, for sure. That's like one of their big, big
acts. We went through a whole, painful. That was a tough first year to put all those.
In the community, all the comments in here are asking
for more time,
expense, and community input. And that's the big thing. It wasn't just people sitting around the table making a decision. This is a community document.
Yeah. So, okay, well.
And you gave them a copy of it.
Yeah, members have a copy.
Okay, well, maybe a foundation has been laid for them to be more involved in the next PROS plan is sort of, I guess, the direction where we're headed.
I can't think we're going to have to expect that.
I don't want to keep having these meetings if we're not going to really take any action.
The other side of the coin is if only he's going to show up.
Kelsey.
Oh, I know, but I feel like we know exactly what they want, and if we aren't in a position to give it to them at this point in time, I don't want to keep hearing it.
I'm thinking a meeting or two more won't hurt, because you will move your way down the line and reiterate. So
I plan on meeting in November.
Yeah, I think we meet in November.
Yeah, that's my only point.
We shut down over the holidays.
I don't want you to think that we're just shutting him down.
I am interested
in
this.
It's just politically expedient.
Two-tiered system. I think that's a good compromise between two groups. I just want to make sure Parks is getting something from this.
No.
It just seems that we're not just giving everything.
Right.
No.
Right.
Because I don't think we're in a position where we just have to give stuff away.
I mean, we want to get something that aligns with what our goals are.
Totally.
Things that we want to achieve. Right. Something.
If we do this right, I think in the future we'll have opportunities where the developers, before they even start putting anything to paper, they come to us and talk and say, "Hey, let's try to work together so we can meet each other's needs."
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's
that would be the best result out of this.
Ending up with a working partnership would be wonderful.
Yes,
we want to make sure that, you know, in addition to parks, because we are heading towards trails, and we have a really poor track record, is that we really try to include connectivity into these future developments.
Okay. Totally. Yep. So.
All right. Then we'll have a meeting in November probably, and then go from there. All right. So we got to kind of rock and roll through the rest of the agenda. I apologize. We've had these two subjects going through. Develop undeveloped parkland. That was Mr. Weston and committee.
Sent a proposal off to community development. And we are waiting to hear back from anything on that yet. So we'll do a follow up on that.
All right.
Okay.
Camp Curry, Lagamas Trail grant conversions.
You skipped Milton Falls Trail.
Oh, did I? Okay. Sorry.
Oh, so Milton Falls Trail, you guys are going to go out there. I don't have an update from the state other than, you know, we submitted the trust land transfer nomination form. That'll go through their process where they internally vet and then provide a recommendation to the governor and then to the state legislature when they convene in January. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how that process all falls out. And other than that, DNR told me this week they have not updated their community outreach flyer on that timber sale. They're still working with what they call stakeholders to figure out what they're doing with that property.
Okay.
So Once I know more, we'll get it to you. And I did ask if they would be willing to respond to the document submitted by Friends of East Fork, so they could talk about their geologic review of that.
I was going to say that.
So when I hear more, I have something for you. It just came across. So,
breaking news.
They have a geological review of that unit. I'll send it to you guys. And
that'd be great.
Yeah.
Take a look at it.
All right. Camp Curry Lacamas Trail grant conversion.
Okay. So I was just hoping to give a quick presentation on that today and get us across that. The public outreach component, obviously, we need our Parks Advisory Board, but I think there's also a 30-day period that we have to advertise for comments as well, which I'm going to work through that. And we have not done enough in this last month to get us to the point where we should probably go out for a motion. So
okay.
To postpone that until this next month, and we'll promise to start working on that. But more, we did meet with Sam Adams from City of Camas yesterday, who's been instrumental in that to date. You know, so we actually met at the pump station that sits on Camp Curry, and talked about the actual trail system itself. So Ledbetter Road. We asked when the alternate road's going to be built. You know, and when will Ledbetter actually become a multi-use trail? And Sam said, within the next 5 years, right? Is that what you got, Jeremy?
Yeah.
So we're going to have this trail system probably in place for the next 5 years that connects Lacamas to the Lacamas Heritage Trail, or Lacamas Park, the Lacamas Heritage Trail. Goes all the way around Lacamas Park, or Lacamas Lake. So, and then connects that connection. So I need to start working with... actually a few folks. So we've got the Lake to Lake Trail, which is Vancouver Lake to Lacamas Lake. That one's not that far away. I mean, we could realistically see that happen in the next 5 years if we push on it. So that Section 30 that's out there at Harmony, that's a major connection that gets us down to the Lacamas Heritage Trail. And then we have to go west. If we follow the Powerline Corridor, we run right into the Brookridge Creek Trail. So we make that connection. It's not that far off. I mean, it's achievable. It's something that we can do. So especially with Ledbetter Road turned into a multi-use trail.
Yeah, multi-use trail.
Yeah.
That would be better.
Yeah. So
it's kind of a bubbly, exciting time for trails, isn't it?
It's interesting. So, but as far as I think we're really close on the grant conversion. It's interesting because the piece that we're going after is kind of like. It's on the other side of the creek. Nobody can get to it right now, not until we build a bridge. But we do need it to make the crossing. And so we'll work through that with RCO and figure out, make sure that whatever we're doing, what process we take, is vetted through them and approved through them, right? So we're not doing it wrong. We have to come back and do it again. That's the reason we're not doing it today. So, okay?
Okay. PIF additional trails update. I'm not sure.
There's a memo in your packet, and I just wanted you to be aware that we submitted that on your behalf. It was just a summary of what was said during that meeting, as well as the two motions. So that's just to keep us in check and for you to be aware of that statement.
Okay.
If you have anything wrong with that statement, then tell me and we can amend it as well.
Yeah, thank you. Good.
You do a good job of keeping us on.
Yeah, you keep us. All right, Conductor John, how's the trail business, or the train business? Great trail.
You know, at this point, it's pretty much out of, if you will, the public's hands, and it's over to the commission. So they're going through.
I believe the commission is already, the councilors have already voted not to expand the...
Yes, yeah, that's an important update. So yeah, they voted to stick with the original map, which was a really good choice. but I don't think they've made any other decisions.
I don't think
it's
so.
Just
no.
All right.
Okay, so new business. We have gone through the public benefit rating system. The I-5 bridge resolution, we have the new resolution language here.
Yes, so the new modified draft that includes a declaration from CAB only has the CAB logo on the back, and it was set on top of your package today.
This was really well written. Nice job.
Here.
Somebody must have copied somebody else. That's wrong.
All right. So then, do we have a motion to allowing us to sign it and submit?
I move that approve the resolution as submitted.
I'll second that.
All right. It's been moved, seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Kelly says aye.
Keep that,
Kelly. We have to allow for the Italian lag here. So.
Well, he's probably drinking vino.
No, he's not drinking. No, Kelly is not drinking. Kelly is not drinking any wine. All right, it passes.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John, for bringing
it. Yes, nice job, John.
Thanks for doing that, John. Absolutely. And, Laura, can you just send this over to the other PABs? Is that the appropriate way to...
We were going to have you sell it at the All PAB if you're going.
Oh, you did say that.
If you can. If you can't, then...
No, I can do that.
That's even better that you're going, so now that you can sell it.
Yeah.
Plagiarize this thing.
Yeah, I'm doing that.
All right. So then you and I need to sign a version.
Yeah.
We'll get square away. All right. The memorial bench policy revision.
Yes. So do we have that up, Jeremy?
Yeah.
Okay. So we've got a couple areas. We need to make a revision because we have got, been having issues with benches, and it's been a real problem, especially with Parks Foundation, because we work together jointly at the park. We worked with Diana. And we've got a lot of requests that come in for benches, and typically all the requests are at the same locations, and we are saturated with benches at these places. I mean, we've been squeezed in, and of course, Jeremy, he's been trying to find every location to put a bench possible at the Louisville Park. And, you know, and so it just seems like we've got several parks out there that that are actually ready to go. So actually, as you're walking in here into Luke Jensen, you look at these benches, there's actually a block out on the concrete. That is, so that bench is donatable. I mean, people can actually adopt that bench, pay us for the plaque, and get the plaque put in. But inevitably, it's always Louisville Park, or it's, was it Frenchman's? Sand Creek Greenway. We got a bench every 12 feet. No, it's not that bad. But Lackamas Lake Park, and so we got this request. We need a moratorium on those sites, right? And so we wanted to revise the language a little bit to where...
No, that was Jay's.
That's mine. Sorry, Kelly.
To where we have available benches in there. And so the one thing we will need to do is actually come up with a list of sites that have those benches that are available. Luke Jensen is a great example here. So I highlighted in yellow the language that we want to see changed in there, at least for the interim time. So I think it's a policy that was approved originally by the county council. And so I want to get your blessing on this first before we take it any farther. So
I think the answer is probably pretty obviously no, but it's worth asking. In addition to that, is it worth saying anything along the lines of, if you've got a neat idea elsewhere, we'll consider it, or is that just going to cause too much administrative?
A neat idea elsewhere for
benches. In other words, what if somebody wants to put it halfway along the Holmes Falls Trail?
Right. I think we could definitely consider something like that.
If it doesn't require too much maintenance.
Yeah, well, my concern about even saying that is I could see where Jeremy is, running all over the county and looking up odd places.
Right.
So,
Bill, I thought we were going to call for a moratorium on that for a little while until we decided.
Moratorium on new benches?
On
new benches. That was the idea. So no new installations. Just the ones that are already in place out here.
Right.
So we've got benches, like Otto Brown, for instance, that was just built. We got four benches there that are donatable, so people can adopt, or adoptable, if you will. There's a placard knockout. So if somebody wants to adopt it, it's like $1,500. We go through the Parks Foundation, they pay it. We order the plaque, put the plaque in, done deal.
So. Do you have a listing of what is available so that if I called and said, I want to buy a bench?
Right.
here. I'm sorry, we don't have any available, but this is what is available.
Right. We used to have one, and they got lost in the data field somewhere. So we'll have to recreate that.
So Jerry has to go to every park and look at every blank.
Ideally, they come to us and say, we have this pantry.
Oh, okay.
That's
he only wants to do that inventory during the summer.
Yeah, right.
We'll probably have some volunteers go out and actually do that. We'll make that a volunteer project, go out and identify all of the existing benches that are adaptable. But that doesn't stop people from wanting, from providing that sports fields or any other things, different things. So that's in this language here.
So they can't donate other things. If you want to have a drinking fountain, information board, disco dance floors, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there you go. Disco dance floors. Okay, here's the next thing. Price predictions. We can check the price off, so prices
will be
put in our vendor and construction pricing. So trying to set a price of $3,500 or $4,000 is just too cumbersome. It seems like we always come in over or under, and it's a problem.
So, that makes sense.
Okay, Jeremy, what's the other language change in here?
And Bill, when you buy a bench, is it a 10-year or a 5-year or what? I mean,
life of the bench.
It is.
It's just forever, pretty much. Yeah. And then, when we get donations for a bench, we always try to get at least probably $500, if not more, to buy a wood package to replace. So years down the road, we can replace it. There's actually a fund in the Parks Foundation right now for replacement boards and to fix up benches that we've got in our system right now. So every once in a while we'll come in and ask, hey, we need about 300 bench boards, so we only need about $4,000. So there's a fund for that that's been set up through all these bench purchases in the past. So, okay. Part of this donation is that we want to make sure that we keep these benches up and usable and looking good. So we basically wiped out this whole section right in here. So costs and standards. So other features such as plazas, play equipment. I have play equipment in there because that's always, if somebody wants to donate play equipment, we're not going to say no to that.
Yeah.
Shelters, etc. will be reviewed on a case-by-case basis. So.
The equipment and installation, let's put that.
Yeah.
The installation that costs so much.
Exactly. So this is just, and this is other existing features, so this is new, other, so same thing, repeated again.
Do we want to add artwork to that?
Yeah. So, we could, the list could go on and on and on as to all the different things, but... the one thing I'm always really kind of concerned about is memorial trees. Sometimes that gets to be... The one thing we've got to be really cautious of, we don't want to turn our parks into cemeteries, right?
Yeah.
Or memorial.
Well, and memorial trees sometimes die, too.
Yes, they
do. And that's real bad for
right.
When you think you call the urban forester, and the urban forester actually does, you can buy a tree from the urban forester, they'll plant it, they'll locate it, they call it your tree. You can do that. So there's an avenue for that already. It's just not in the county.
We do treat stuff on occasion, but hopefully we try to put it into an irrigated spot so we don't, nurse it for years. And I think that is the extent of the changes, is it not, Jeremy? So that's what we want to do. Basically, put a moratorium on new benches, new tables until such time that we lift that moratorium.
So that includes picnic tables, too. You can
essentially, yeah. So we've got a bunch of tables out there, a bunch of benches that are ready to be adopted at any time. The block that's already there.
Orphans looking for a home.
Right.
That's right. Yep. That'll keep money right into the park.
There you go.
Okay, do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion to support the memorial bench policy moratorium.
I'll second.
All right. Moved, seconded. Any further discussion? All those. Oh, go ahead.
And the policy. And approve the language changes in the policy.
Yeah.
All the above.
That's what she said originally. We just didn't hear.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's been moved, seconded. Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Aye.
Kelly's aye. We've got you. All right. Moving along to the meeting in December. Do we want a meeting in December?
A few folks. I'm happy to meet if you want to, or if you want to take a little break. You're certainly welcome to. I know holiday season, it's always good to go and spend it. But it's up to you. We did it last year. We did it the year before. So,
I've got enough stuff coming down the pipe. We want to keep the meeting shorter because we've got a major something coming up next year.
Maybe something needs to apply.
Yeah,
John, you're the chair of this. Yeah. You remember?
Yeah.
You just got volunteered as the chair.
Actually, I remember him saying he wanted to volunteer.
Does anyone feel strongly one way or the other? I don't feel strongly one way or the other.
Depends on what day it is.
It is. That's what I'm looking. It would be...
Chris is on Tuesday, so we got that covered.
First. It would looks like be the 14th of December. School's not out till the 20th.
I won't be here that weekend, but...
Four.
That doesn't mean we shouldn't have a meeting.
Actually, I'll be gone that weekend.
I'll be there.
All right, so two...
Kelly, will you be in town?
Coming home on Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Kelly will be here.
Kevin, will you be here?
I'll be here.
We don't know about Dave, but...
So we will have a quorum.
We would have a quorum.
You will have a quorum, so yeah.
So do it.
What day again?
Well, if nothing else, we can...
14th.
February.
14th of December.
Yeah. All right.
Get my
camera.
That's right.
I say we do it.
I did a hell of a
I say we
yes,
do it.
Yeah.
And then could you do, we had a couple like end of the year things we wanted presented. Does anyone remember what they were? Oh, the Conservation Futures, we're going to do that in January.
Yep.
Maybe Eric come and do a reservation, how much money we need.
I think that next month, actually Eric can do that.
Okay.
And I will probably, well, actually, if we're having a meeting in December, I'll do a year in review.
Okay, perfect.
Sound good?
Yeah,
okay.
That would be great.
Right.
All right, so do we need to make a motion? Or
No, I don't think so.
Right.
I think we just keep going forward.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just Sophie.
Only if we were canceling it.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so we move to the manager's meeting.
Did I get those out to you yet?
You just did. Laura just did.
Your right-hand man had them.
She did, always.
Did we?
She gave them to all of us, but none to you.
Where are we in the agenda?
We're managers.
So
the
turn the page.
Oh, did we already cover the I-5 bridge resolution? Because I don't remember us having a dialogue on
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we just said, we approve it. Because we've reviewed
Did
it before.
Not hear us say that?
Yeah.
Yes, I think you did, because John was going to sell the rest of the
PAB on it at the LPAB meeting.
Yeah.
Any of this ringing?
Yep.
Okay.
But I guess I was reading it while we were making John in charge of things. I think there's... Okay. There may be some changes we would like to make, but...
There are.
Okay.
I read through it. I thought it was really well written. What do you got? You're the English gal.
No, I just think the last whereas on the first page is redundant, and I think that the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5th whereas in here where it talks about especially during the daily commute periods hindering the efficient movement of people, services, and goods. I mean, it's not just about moving people. And whereas increased traffic congestion is affecting travel time reliably for businesses, workers, and emergency responders. It's not just workers. It's not people just from our side wanting to go work over in Oregon, which is maybe a point that we need to make to the Oregonians who want to tax us. Then under the pedestrian pathway across I-5, narrow and impair the bridge component effectively serve the needs and to provide safe travel for pedestrians and bicycle users. Anyway,
Jennifer.
Some kind of conversation we want to have in there, great. If not, I'm fine moving forward too. So I don't know if it makes a difference or not, but
for my part, I'm fairly neutral on it. I will note that some of what you just said I actually took out of the original resolution that Vancouver Mayor. because I was trying to focus it on park stuff.
Our side, yeah.
That's why I took out the parade stuff.
Gotcha.
Like that. Yeah. But I'm totally good.
I don't think that by Robert's rules, we can't go back in the same meeting and revise, unfortunately.
Well, sorry, I was... apparently my brain is sleeping during parts of our dialogue. I was calendaring, I was doing all kinds of really important things.
No texting and driving.
That's right. No texting and participating.
All right, well, if you guys are good with it, that's fine. I just wanted to make sure I brought up what I saw, and that's good for you guys and good venue.
Okay.
Oh, so on to the manager's meeting?
On to the manager's.
So just real quickly, we talked about some of this already, but I just wanted to give you a heads up of the upcoming meetings. October 18th is our Planning Commission hearing, and Steve Dewar will be coming into town for that, and Lori Lebowski will be joining us. And so then, once that is done, we will enter into our series of the councilor work session on December 12th, followed by the hearing on December 18th. I got two on December's there. I didn't do a spell check or correct myself. So the next one, the staff report for OTAC Incorporated to perform design, engineering, and permitting of Cozy Camp. That staff report was approved this Tuesday, and so we're hoping that we can get that permitted, and actually we can do both Cozy Camp and Curtain Creek Community Park at the same time. We'd like to bundle if we can to save on cost. And so today we went up to Moulton Falls to take a look at the railing. So Sean Hennessy really wanted to go up there and take a look at it so he could make a judgment call as to whether we should fence it or not based on the incident that occurred where the team pushed the other one off the bridge, and the video went viral literally around the world. It was actually in Europe and Asia, everywhere. And so the consensus is probably not to do any fencing. You know, that's my preference over a single incident. I don't like to take action that I need to, you know, reaction over something, especially on a bridge that's been there since 1976. And so it's funny, we got up there today, approached the bridge, and here's this kid sitting on the rail, up on top of the rail, you know, with his legs on the outside, right on top of the no jumping or diving sign. So what Sean had recommended is, hey, if we can, let's put some no jumping or diving signs on the approaches of the bridge as you approach, because there's some flares there. So Amanda, so one thing, I guess, is that something that we can do? I'll come back and ask you that question later on. We already have a no jumping diving sign on the inside of each rail, right in the middle, where in the deepest part, where the kids actually climb over and do their thing. So, anyways, this would be enhancing what is already there.
This is a suggestion of signing, maybe instead of saying no, do something like shallow depth or something like that, that puts some kind of a scare to the kids.
Stupid to jump.
Makes them think twice before they do
it. Depth unknown, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, depth unknown, something like that, instead of no. I mean, no diving, jumping, shallow depths, depth unknown, something like that.
Do they have one of those standard things where they've got the diver with the...
I like death center.
We did reach out to North County EMS, and we did have four incidents this year, two incidents last year, injuries that were directly related to jumping off the bridge.
Again, though, how many signs?
Exactly.
I mean, there's a point where two signs, four signs, eight signs, like, if people are going to do it, an additional sign is not going to change the
signs. Signs are not going to stop people if they want to do it.
Correct. So, if we have it in the budget to make more signs, but if this is going to cost, like, $500 to put more signs up, I don't know, like, you can't regulate poor decision making.
We could electrify it.
Yes.
Ooh, that's good.
Then we have all the EMS calls for like shock.
Oh, yeah. There's a whole nother. That's a whole nother realm of.
You have a dark side.
Yeah.
You have a darkness today.
So the last thing I had was as of in January, we're actually going to convert the remaining five caretakers to volunteer park hosts. We've been doing this since 2014 through attrition. So when a caretaker left, we could bring back a volunteer park host. Want to get this off the general fund, So they earn dollars per hour in exchange for rent. So there's a small amount of general fund that's expended in that. And so this is basically getting us off the landlord business. Because all too often a lot of our caretakers would not pay the rent. And so they get 3 or 4 months behind, and we have to, you know, throw eviction notices out there and all kinds of different things, which meant their job was over. And this just really cleans it up. And so we get a little bit different clientele. And so it's just our PA's office told us to, and our HR both said, hey, why don't you just pull the trigger and just get it done? So we're going to do that. We've had some really good luck with Volunteer Park Host. We advertise on Happy Vagabond. So these are people who are traveling around, and they like to see the world. A lot of our sites.
We all wrote down Happy Vagabond. What's your retirement?
We're all going to be the one checking that website.
Is it an option?
I can see my retirement program right here.
Do you have any golf courses?
Yeah. So what's nice is we've got homes, you know, in some of our sites. So people can actually move into homes and live there for up to 2 years. You know, and then they have to have a separation of 6 months, and then they come back.
What if they're really great volunteer park hosts, and you kick them out after 2 years?
You just train somebody. They come over to your place, and you go to their place for 6 months.
Yeah, I wish. It's been established that if we keep them over a period of time, it establishes an employee-employer relationship.
Yes.
Yeah, we're not necessarily volunteers anymore, so we got to really watch it.
That's kind of a bummer, though.
What's that?
7 years is a long time.
It's a long time. We had to beg for that.
You're not very much of a bad guy. Yeah. Stays in place for 2 years.
Anyway, so that's all I had. I just want to tell you how much I appreciate having this board. So it's wonderful listening to you. All the debate today, that was wonderful. So points and counterpoints, all kinds of stuff.
One thing we can't do is debate.
Good, great conversation. So I really appreciate this.
All right. The All-PAB meeting is next Friday, 4 to 7, at Lacamas Lake Lodge. If you haven't been there, you ought to go just to see the place. It's really nice. Hopefully we'd have weather like this so you can go stand out on the dock and wonder if they're going to drain the lake or what they're going to do.
So Camus took it over.
No, Camus took it over.
Took it over. It was in the papers.
Yeah. They didn't have much choice in that.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
And Ludbetter Road's right there, so you can look at what we're going to have a trail.
Exactly. Yeah, but it's a really nice place. Okay, go around the table, see if anybody's got any more. Laura, you got anything else?
I was just really thankful for the Palaida Neighborhood Association for honoring our staff. I was able to be there along with Bill and Eric and Pat. And it was just a really nice opportunity. And Palaida did a great job. So I felt like we needed to give you an award as well. So thank you so much for that. Really cherished that.
It was wonderful, Melata. You did a wonderful job. That was fantastic.
Okay. It was a great opportunity. I saw all the reports on the social media and everything else. It was really nicely done. John?
Community centers continues to be a discussion in East County. Camus should be starting to fill in its mill ditch to create a new trail through the city.
I can't quite hear you, John.
The community center is still an ongoing discussion in Camus Portugal, and the city will be filling in the mill ditch starting sometime real soon to create a greenway through this town, which is going to be needed. And we are unveiling an eagle on Monday, Tuesday, sometime soon.
11?
Any random eagle or
it's a sculpture. It's beautiful.
Cut an eagle.
Yeah.
John Cotton. Keeping it in his barn.
I should really say when it is though. It's
I think I put it on my Facebook page.
There it is. October 24th at 11 AM. So this is going to be, it is a life-size bronze sculpture of an eagle along our waterfront trail.
Cool.
And it just looks gorgeous. It's gorgeous.
Cool.
Yeah, it's actually up right now.
That's awesome.
Okay.
And that's the
last thing that's exciting is Don Carver in the
middle. Cool.
All right.
Well, first of all, just thank you all for allowing me to come and join this group.
Thank you.
I'm sure it was tight. But I can see it's going to be a huge learning curve. I'm just sitting here, being on the other two parks, I'm thinking, wow, I don't know what that is. I didn't know what you guys were talking about. And so please be patient with me. I'll do my homework and try to catch up.
Thank you.
You're already running right alongside all your years on the rack. You're good to go, girlfriend.
No, thank you. But it is a whole different ballgame, isn't it?
Yeah, very different board.
Yeah. She warned me when I sat down.
More better.
Yeah.
More better. Schools are still trucking along, building schools, putting things in the earth and the concrete in the earth, and I don't know what to say. We are so overwhelmed. We have 6 projects out to bid right now, but we have been closing out all of the playgrounds across the county. I think all the county playgrounds are done, with the exception of Anderson. There's a small playground at Anderson still that is tiled, still getting complete. And then we just have some ADA issues that we're working through at some of the other schools where, say, we have a slide that now was never installed properly, so that the slide ends on the, you know, the depth of the tile. So we knew some of those things were going to come up, but just getting in contact with the existing playground person to get a new slide, to have it reinstalled, you know, those things are just, they're going to take a while to finish unresolving, because people are not all that responsive to rebuying an old, you know, slide that fit an old piece of equipment. And so. Anyway, fields are in use, and I don't know if we have all the lighting in. I guess it's not county, but city. Skyview might have their lighting up by now. I have to drive by there.
But all the turf is in now.
Yep, turf's in. Cool. It's great. The lighting then follows, so that we'll have lighting. And if you all remember Skyview when it went in, lighting was really a big no-no in that community. So we reached back out to that community, and they're very receptive. I mean, the technology for lighting has changed significantly.
Yeah,
so.
The LED light is actually going
it's
down.
It doesn't pollute anymore.
Which was right by.
Yeah. So anyway, we're just cruising right along. In the county, I guess there's iTech Preparatory. It's under construction, and that's kind of an exciting site. And working on Columbia River High School right now, so you'll see some significant changes happening there in relation to recreation. We'll have some stadium upgrades. Of course, the turf got replaced already, but there'll be some stadium upgrades. So. Fun times.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun to have money to build new things. We're thankful for the community for supporting.
I've got 2 quick things. One, I'm going to miss the all tabs, sorry, but going on a 7-day road trip to Northern California with my husband to celebrate 10 years of wedded bliss. so I'll be in Big Sur State Park, but I'm sending you good vibes for the all tab.
At least you guys are going to celebrate together.
Yeah, right? I never even thought of that.
That's a win.
Yeah. And 2, I just want to thank Jay for being such a, he's like the peanut butter to my jelly in the parks thing. Like, at our deed meeting, I didn't have a piece of paper and he didn't have a pen, but I had an extra pen and he had an extra paper. So it just feels like, a good partnership.
Nice, good team, yeah.
Having some, he's a good person to have on your side during awkward conversations. Thank you, Jay, for that.
Well, thank you. It's just, unfortunately, I'm kind of good at some of that stuff. So yeah. I don't know. I do appreciate Melata and the Flida group doing their awards. I apologize, I wasn't there, but I thought everybody that received the award, Barbara, the Clark County, all of you guys deserve an award. It's too bad we can't do that every quarter or every, every year at least. Maybe we can start a trend with that.
The other thing is I do want to echo what Bill said, that I appreciate the board and what we've done. We've done some great things. We've got some more good things to do, but, you know, getting through the legacy lands, getting through the deed and working through that and diffusing some situations, I think sometimes boards do not get enough credit for that, but everybody's been involved in it. Kevin with the, you know, the Lewis Clark Trail work, I mean, and Barbara and Kelly, both of you guys doing the foundation work for the PROS plan and everything else, because it's pretty funny when people bring it up and they can't really throw rocks at it or anything else, they just kind of fall and hit on the ground. So, and believe me, that's a great compliment, because those plans, sometimes people just think they've been thrown together, but you guys obviously, there was a lot of work went into it, a lot of effort. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
So, do next time without Gene Akers.
Yeah, what are we going to do?
Wow.
Hire Jane Tessner.
She's still on staff.
Yeah.
She'd
have to fly back.
She'd have to. No, we had several 4-hour special meetings to get to the PROS plan.
No, we went through it, so.
Thank you, Jay, for saying very kind words about our awards ceremony, because that's very important that we recognize the parks and all the wonderful things that they're doing, and Barbara's been, of course, very constantly pulling for it. But you still owe me a write-up in the newsletter.
Got it. I got it. It's got to work.
Easy
payment. Kelly, do you have anything?
Good wine.
Good wine, yeah.
Hello, Kelly.
Kelly.
You there?
I think he's gone.
Well, it kept
Kelly,
cutting in and out.
Us?
It cuts in.
I just want to say I thought you guys had some great conversation there.
Thanks.
Okay.
All right. It'd be better if it had wine with it, but that's all right.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can hear you. We can hear you.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
There's a delay. There's a delay in there.
Can you hear me? I can hear you.
How many miles is it between here and there?
A lot.
A lot of miles.
In
Italy? That string in the cup is working really
good. Yeah, yeah.
Barbara?
I just had one thing, and that was...
9 hours.
Oh, what?
9 hours.
Oh,
difference.
9 hours difference. Yeah, it's way past your bedtime.
Kelly, for being away.
Yes.
Well into the wine.
Yeah, the only thing that I have observed, and maybe it's not a reasonable request, but I'm going to say it anyway, and that is we all have social media, not all, but many of us have social media outlets, and that there's a lot of these volunteer opportunities that I might ask you to maybe share on your timeline, because you've got different friends than our Parks Advisory Board does. And we picked up a couple of volunteers that way. And I just noticed looking that not everybody does that. So I just make that suggestion.
I'll get right on all my social media posts.
All your social media. I know.
Yeah.
I know you're not their girlfriend, but that's why I had to correct myself. That one, Yolanda, is not on yet either. But those of you that do, please take a moment.
Good idea.
Because some of these work parties, I ended up getting a couple of my neighbors up at the park the other day, and I thought, it works. So, just a thought.
All right.
Okay, well, I apologize for missing 2 months worth of meeting. Had a lot of personal stuff going on with extended family, so hopefully it's all settled down for now, and I'll be back up to speed over by next meeting. So thank you all for your patience.
But we're going to take it out on you, Kevin. We're going to get all...
I heard I got voluntold.
You did.
So I'll find out.
You're not on the Railroad Use Committee or whatever.
Yeah, you were lucky, Kevin. You were lucky.
Yeah.
You and Conductor John will have to figure out.
Yeah.
Figure that out.
You know, I got one thing that we should probably talk about real quickly. We are nearing the end of the year, and I think some terms are coming up to the end. Is that correct? Is it both of you?
Both of ours.
And mine.
And yours, Barbara. So we have 3 positions, so we'll probably have to start that process before we review. We have to send it in to the counselors for their review. And we'll provide our recommendations and then let them make the final choice. Does that sound good?
Sounds good.
They've been really, really good.
No, no one. I run my mouth a lot.
we'll start that process.
Okay.
Get it moving, okay?
Yeah. Let us know what we need to do.
I'm good with mine. So yeah.
Right. No problem. Yeah.
Can I ask? I didn't think of doing my job here, but I'd like, Laura brought up Boo Bill is October 27th. It's at, on a Saturday, and down at the Mookie Center. And please come. It's so much fun. It's free. Bring your kids, your grandkids, or just come down. People are in costume. We give out, we're going to have a pumpkin patch where all kids will get a pumpkin. You know, it's just a fun time. We're looking for sponsors. You know, we're all bringing candy. I mean, you know, it's just a volunteer thing that we're putting together. The last thing is our executive director has resigned, and so we're in the position of accepting applications. So if anybody knows somebody that they think would be a good fit for the executive director, please, it's on our website, Park Foundation, and please have them submit. We're not going to do an interim. We want to get a full-time position. So staff and board members, executive committee, we're picking up the slack and trying to do what a very, very active executive director used to do. So we do have, you know, the need to get that filled quickly. So please, if you know anybody, let them know that we're looking. It's a great job. It starts about, we're in about the 60, you know, so we need everybody's help. We've got it on all the sites. But we're not getting as much response as we thought we would. But huh?
It's a tight labor market.
It is. That's what we're finding. So, from the Park Foundation to do it. And of course, everybody was at our grand opening, I'm sure, for the waterfront. For the Park and Rec Board.
That I drove a shuttle bus for Vancouver Parks and Rec for the day. And it started out slow. I started at 9 o'clock. I worked till 4. About 11 o'clock, my bus was full every ride. People were happy. They had a good time. Kids had their little buckets, face paint, snow cones. Everybody was overjoyed at that.
Great speeches. It was really cool.
It's great. And they estimated about, they were expecting about 10,000 to 12,000 people. They estimated about 15,000. And yet it's such a spread out area. You didn't feel like you had that much of a mass there, so wonderful, and the restaurants are open, and so go down and enjoy. Beautiful thing.
Kevin, you got anything?
I was just going to let you guys know, a couple of you submitted letters of interest for the Camp Bonneville Advisory Committee, so all of the information, all the letters of interest, a packet of just general overview of what we're trying to do with the master plan was submitted to council for their consideration, and it sparked a lot of discussion. And so they requested that we put together a work session request form to have another work session with them in the near future. So that work session request form has been submitted, and I believe it's going to be on council time this coming week, so we'll have a little bit more information after that. Sorry it's been taking so long, but it's what it is.
Wheels of progress move slowly. Yeah. Jeremy, you got anything?
No.
No. I think Jeremy's ready to go.
Like it's Friday.
All right, with that, we'll adjourn. Thank you very much.
Thank you.